Hey, this is Chuck Dixon, and you're listening to Signal of Doom.
Well, you know, for me, the action is the juice. I'm in.
Is everybody in? Is everybody in? Everybody in. The ceremony is about to begin.
But you don't understand. There was the high school episode and the future episode where they had a daughter. Of course Milhouse is in game.
Yes, and Lisa is so fulfilled in all of those. In fact, there's that Christmas episode where she's so fulfilled by him that who is she calling? Nelson. You know why? Because they are endgame. It's almost stupid to even discuss it. This show has been going on for like so long that there's so many different future scenarios. It's like it's been 30 years.
Yeah, that's true. That reminds me of Stella on her podcast, Batgirl to Oracle. She's had a pretty healthy run. How long do you think it will last?
Forever. Ooh, let's give Stella a call.
Hello?
Hey,
Stella.
Why are you guys using Skype? Don't you want a FaceTime?
No.
Don and I were just talking about BTO and how long it's lasted.
Remember when we were kids, you didn't think it would go very far?
What? What are you talking about?
Stella, how long are you going to do this show?
Meh. 10 episodes a year. Whichever come first.
You won't make it that long. You're a girl.
Yeah, and girls have cooties.
Gee, you guys really were supportive back then.
We made up for it.
By doing what? Mansplaining?
And casplaining.
Ugh. Well, anyway, 2020 is going to be a milestone. We've got the 10th anniversary in December, and of course the 200th episode after that.
What are you planning on doing?
Call-in show for listeners will be scheduled in December, and the 200th is going to feature some very special guest reviewers, hopefully.
Ooh, I'll be sure to free my calendar.
Not you. You're, no. Fly on with Batgirl the Oracle in 2020.
Hello and welcome to Signal of Doom, episode 129. I'm Dave and I'm here with Ray. Ray from Into the Night, Ray from Last Sons of Crypto, a member of the Collective. How are you, brother?
Yeah, good, Dave. I'm loving it. Back in the swamp. It's great. Another version of the swamp now, Dave.
A late Saturday night, man. I've got my coffee. I've got my Deadpool hat on. Yeah. I've got my Clark Kent glasses on. I'm rocking and rolling. How are you over there on a Saturday night, Ray?
I'm good, actually. You probably can't see it. I've got the old Punisher.
Punisher, all right.
Old Punisher skull on. So yeah, I'm loving it. I've got a wine. We both have our vices here, Dave.
So. Oh, exactly. Well, I always say I run on caffeine and instinct. Caffeine and instinct is all that keeps Dave going. Like there really is nothing left, like internal. You know what I'm saying? Like there's no soul anymore. It's just reflexes and reaction. Yeah. That's all that's left. And I can bat long with that, man. Bat very long.
I was watching a documentary on Netflix, and this poor girl, it was I think it was a diagnosis. It was about people with unexplained illnesses, and she had urine the color of coffee grounds. So I'm just wondering, Dave, if your insides are all darkened and black as well.
I'm a hollow shell inside, man. Yeah, like, of course. Like, everyone knows that. At one point in my career, I was drinking 8 coffees a day at work.
Ooh,
and my boss said to me, you're going to have a heart attack. And I turned and looked at her and said, I'm still here. And 20 years later, after that comment, I'm still here.
Did you get the tremors? Like, did you ever get the tremors? Yeah?
Well, not from that. Sometimes when I'm really exhausted, I've worked a really long week and I'm pushing out shows and all that. Yeah. Every now and then I get very slight shake if I'm really exhausted, usually to do with like hunger.
Okay.
And that's when Davey knows he's pushed it a little bit too far.
Yeah,
that's
right.
When, that's when I know I need to dial it back in a little bit. You know?
Yeah.
I don't know how you do it, man, with all these shows that you pump out. Like I do the Signal and I might do one other thing, every few weeks. But you... You're like a guest on so many shows now.
I know. I don't think I can sustain it, Dave.
How's the marriage coping with it?
It's fine. It's fine. There have been a few comments here and there. But it's on my mind. But no, it's not going to be forever. I mean, you know, got my own shows, which I'm very happy. I'm happy to jump on board for guest spots as well.
We love you on the signal. I love you on the signal.
I love being on you, yeah.
You're almost like there's Stu, obviously the main man, and he's on jury duty. But then you come in, and I feel like you're kind of like guys used to fill Johnny Carson's seat back in the 70s. You know, like you'd have comedians who come on who do 30, 40 shows as a guest host. That's what you're like to me, Ray, a dependable, man coming in. Stu's so deep in his negotiations. Do you think he even knows what he's negotiating anymore? after 3 months,
I'm very keen to know what case he's on. You're going to have to grill him, you know?
I will. I want to know what case he's on. I want to know what his verdict was. I want to know the ins and outs of the whole thing, man. Like, and the I most, want to get yeah. him deep.
And the most important thing, you've got to ask him if he's kept up with his comic books as well.
Who knows, man? He's actually so far off the reservation and so far out of contact. He's almost a ghost at the moment. Jeez. Like, we've got to bring him back. And when he comes back, can you imagine, like, I said to Adam the computer last week, do you think Stu's listening to solo episodes? Do you think he's sitting there?
Yeah, that's right.
Listening to my voice? I hope so. Late at night.
Some notion of some connection with humanity. So I can imagine him, Stu, with the old earphones on, just huddled in a corner somewhere listening to the signal.
Although I do question if someone's last connection to humanity is me, and I'm barely connected. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, I'm hanging on by a thread with my worldview.
Darth Vader, more machine than man.
More machine than man. I've stripped the emotions away. If he's coming to me for the human touch, I don't know. It's a cold touch, man. It's a cold metallic touch.
I'm bitterly disappointed, I guess.
All right, so we're moving on. Trade of the week this week. It was Bloodshot.
Yeah.
For a moment, I completely forgot what it was. But I have still remembered it. We're doing what Stu wants, saying right at the top of the show what we're doing.
Yes.
And it's Bloodshot, the 2012 series from Valiant Comics. Mm-hmm. 6 issues. Your recommendation, Ray. We'll cover it later on in the show. And I will say this, though. I will say it's extremely enjoyable.
I thought it would be up your alley.
It was.
I can't wait to get into it. But we've got a whole heap of really good comic books as well.
Ray, this is the one thing, Ray. You, like, weekly comics, I like to be a bit lazy. And you put me into overdrive. I was reading on Planes, Trains and Automobiles today to get through the reading. Like, Michelle's watching a show and I'm just having to read the last final few pages of, like, the 17 books Ray, put in, one of which went for 90 pages or something. Like,
God. No, that was you put that in. That was a long one, wasn't it? Jeez,
I'm throwing you under the bus, but it was actually my pick. And I looked at it and went, what? 80 pages? Like, I was like, really? Like,
I know. I tell you, though, that's why I did it. There were a lot of enticing, not necessarily good. We'll get into all the comics, but there were a lot of enticing titles and issues out this week. So I just couldn't help myself.
Yeah. No, it's good, man. I like your energy. I like your freshness. Like, I don't know how you do it. Now, we're going to start off with some news. We've got a few trailer things here. There's a new Star Wars sizzle reel they showed at D23 a few days ago. I rewatched it just before the show. Basically, the first half of it is all nostalgia shots from all the previous movies. And then it leads into some pretty wicked scenes, or at least some interesting scenes with Rey fighting Kylo Ren.
Yep.
And various other bits and pieces. What did you make of this?
I'm not like a Star Wars fan, but it's not like I don't know anything about it. It's fun. I watch all the movies when they come out, but I kind of, I don't seek out the trailers or the news for it. So I'm just happy when the movie comes out to give it a watch and I'll see what happens. More casual, very casual. But having said that, I'd like to think I'm not like a total noob with it. But with this trailer, it was good. I'm sure there were people that would have problems with it and people that would love it. It's just middle ground for me, really.
Eric at Jimmy and Eric Rule the Galaxy, or Eric and Jimmy Rule the Galaxy, had real issues with it.
Oh.
Because he says it's just, well, I think his issue is that it's, most of it's just nostalgia at the start, like just a best of clips of various points, which tell us nothing more.
Yep.
And then there's scenes with C-3PO has red eyes, Rey is wielding sort of like a weird kind of lightsaber. Mm. I don't know, like, and there's Mark Hamill's voice then turns into the Emperor's voice. I think the biggest issue they may face is it feels like there's a ton of story that they've got to pay off, and it doesn't feel like it's going to be justified. Like, it feels like these last two movies haven't really given us a very clear narrative, and suddenly we're going to, JJ is going to come in and clean it all up. JJ is not famous for coming in and cleaning up stories.
Well, I mean, what are your thoughts? You're quite an avid fan for Star Wars. Like, you've collected collected editions, seen all the films. Was your take similar to that opinion?
Yeah, I've put it this way. I'm a pretty big fan, but mostly of the movies, but I have tried to branch out. Like, I love Star Wars, but Last Jedi, without being as extreme as some people on the internet, it definitely did hit me the wrong way.
Oh, you and Connor had a big discussion about that as well.
Yeah, and I think when I saw it in cinemas at first, I was just unsatisfied and felt like this isn't really Star Wars. I mean, yeah, I think the internet overreacted, probably. Mm. It wasn't like the fall of fucking Rome.
It never does does it? The internet never overreacts.
Oh, no, never, never. And I never overreact either. I don't know. But, like, it killed a lot of enthusiasm and optimism that I had. And then I went back and rewatched Force Awakens, and I was curiously unsatisfied with that as well. Uh-huh. And then I'm sort of querying, what can JJ do, you know, really? Because I don't really trust JJ in wrapping anything up at all.
Mm.
His whole career is setting up little mystery boxes, little sort of question marks that are sort of interesting, but they're not really true payoffs. And that's kind of been his whole storytelling technique for his whole career. He's not going to radically change for this.
No.
But am I interested? Yeah. And do I think it'll be better than Last Jedi? Yeah, because I think Disney will have heard people like me who really want to like the series again.
Yeah.
We're not happy with Last Jedi. There's a lot of people who, without being rabidly angry, are just like, that really wasn't a good Star Wars movie. Like, I didn't like what they did with Luke Skywalker. I didn't like what they did with Leia and various other bits and pieces. So I don't know. I'm going to watch it. I mean, I'm keen. I hope it's good. Like, but this is a real, again, I think it relies so heavily on the past that it doesn't really give us much clear insight into the future.
Well, maybe that's it. Maybe they're holding their cards close to their chest. They don't want to give too much away. There's the whole thing about revealing too much in the trailer. So maybe they're just.
Yeah.
They're just putting something together, slapdash.
Yeah, fair enough. And you know what? I also think in modern times, one of the biggest problems I have, and we have a movie coming up this, or a trailer coming up this show, is when too much is shown in a trailer. When I feel like I'm seeing the movie in a trailer, that actually annoys me.
Mm.
I like to walk in pretty fresh.
Yeah.
And I can think of a lot of modern movies. Spider-Man Homecoming had a trailer that showed you the whole spine of the movie, for example. And there are other examples as well. Batman vs. Superman showed you a ton, if you recall. Had showed Doomsday. There was no need to show so much in the trailer.
Yeah. It's terrible. Those TV spots or the trailers, they reveal more and more the closer you get to the date. It's just ridiculous. I like what Marvel does, and they do, I don't know if this is a trend now, but they do the mislead. I know you and Stu always talk about it, about in the trailers that never actually happened in the movie, you know, and they actually shoot, what do you call, dummy footage just to actually mislead. And I think that's really good.
Yeah, I think it's exactly. And those Marvel trailers are so exhaustively mined by, you know, like the internet, like when they come out, like too much so, frankly. Yeah.
Well, they know their audience. That's why they do it. So,
Well, anyway, no, I am hopeful for Star Wars, definitely. Then we had another trailer that came out, The Joker, final trailer with Joaquin Phoenix. I mean, I think this looks really powerful. What do you think?
I was, to be honest, I was blown away. This has taken it up another step from the first trailer that was released. And this is from a guy that has no vested interest in The Joker or, you know, I'll go watch a DC movie, but, you know, not really that keen on it, but watching the trailers, yeah, just totally, totally invested in Joaquin Phoenix's performance. I know there are people screaming for Oscar nominations already. He's only got a trailer shown, but having said that, if you watch the trailer, you will see what everyone's talking about. He's mesmerizing, you know, just those short moments that he has. He really, I don't know, he doesn't ham it up, but he puts so much into it. You can tell he's really throwing himself in. Yeah, he's throwing himself into the role. It's not like Colin Farrell in Daredevil where he's just like phoning it in, you know what I mean?
And a paycheck.
Yeah,
Colin Farrell for a paycheck once again.
Yeah, exactly.
Call on SWAT Farrell.
But know, having said that as well, the Joker as a role is a pretty juicy role for any actor, I'd imagine. So you would like just immerse yourself in it, and it just looks fantastic, I think. How about you?
Oh yeah, I mean, look, huge Joaquin Phoenix fan, and like, I mean, his performance in Walk the Line is one of my favorite performances in this millennium.
Yeah.
You know, like, I thought it was fantastic. I think he's a fantastic actor who, when he turns on, is so capable. He can turn completely off and be just a robot in movies when he wants to be. But he has turned on for this Joker movie. It is a juicy role. I mean, Jack Nicholson was fantastic. Heath Ledger was fantastic. Leto was a garbage fire, you know?
Yeah.
No, but I mean, Joaquin Phoenix, yeah, I mean, a solid director behind him, a good script, you let him go, and, you know, I think he's going to burn it up with this role, and I don't think nominations are out of the question at all, but I'm just looking forward to a good movie, and I hope an in-cinematography performance, again, from Joaquin Phoenix, who has done it in, let's name them, Gladiator, Walk the Line, Her, or was it Her or She? I forget what it was called, but one of those two.
Yeah, yeah.
And eventually this. I mean, yeah, I was a huge fan of his brother back in the 80s and 90s.
Oh, Stand By Me, My Own Private Idaho, you know, those movies were top-notch.
Yeah. Fantastic films. Running on Empty as well, and that his brother has turned into such a fantastic actor is really good. Like, that's a very talented... I mean, yeah, he's every movie that I can think of where Joaquin Phoenix is really good, it is amazing, you know. Mm. And I do think that he's turned it in for this role, and that was a great trailer. Like,
it was good. I think also I'm wondering, I haven't obviously been following his exploits recently, but I think he's actually physically changed himself for the role as well. There's a sense of not emaciated, but he's quite lean and
dropped
weight. Yeah, dropped in weight, but he's got that frame that you kind of expect from the Joker, kind of gangly. And there's something slightly, I don't have the adjectives, but like scary and just something a bit off by him. And I know it's, I think they're going to focus on, I guess, the mental illness issues of it, which is going to be really good. But also, Dave, I wanted to kind of temper, you know, our thoughts on this, because I've seen a lot of other comments and I wanted your thoughts on those comments. So, just that it was crazy boring, that the soundtrack was just dull.
The Joker trailer?
The Joker trailer, yeah. It surprised me. I mean, but anyway, we're trying to give a nice, you know, well-versed, you know, I guess, depiction of it. People were, some people weren't, you know.
It's the fuck what people are saying anyway.
Snorefest, like, you know.
They can go fuck off. Like, this is an award kind of worthy movie, going for a mood. It's not a classic superhero movie. This is a joke trying to blow up the building in the United Nations being fought by Superman, you know. It's a different take, a more psychological take. I love the nods to previous Martin Scorsese movies, like when De Niro was saying, or someone was saying, is this a joke? Am I funny to you? That's a direct line from, is it Goodfellas?
Right.
The Taxi Driver. I believe Scorsese or producing partner is a producer on this movie, so that was interesting that there was a nod to that. No, I mean, I don't pay any attention to those people who are making those comments, because I think they're probably expecting Batman vs. Superman, you know, Joker kind of in a madcap kind of, you know, more romp-style movie, whereas this psychological exploration of the disintegration that took place that made him become Joker. This is a completely different style of movie to Aquaman. Do you know what I mean?
Exactly, like, yeah.
a completely different frame. So I tend not to worry too much. I hadn't heard those comments, but I also hadn't sought them out because I'm a big fan of, like, I'll watch a trailer myself and make my own fucking mind up, you know?
Exactly. It's, yeah, I know. It is a very different movie. What I think is that they've tapped into, I think, one of the big strengths of the character, a comic book character. Actually, it transcends just a comic book character in the sense that, and what we're going to get, it seems, is this movie that, you know, as you said, transcends a comic book movie. I think it can be standalone, just a profile of a seriously disturbed gentleman who's the Joker, and his descent.
It's like an adult take on this character. And I think, you know, like, I mean, for example, Logan was a similar style, not action heavy, more of a character piece.
It still had, towards the end, it had a bit of comic book elements in there, but...
But it had a lot less than, say, X-Men Last Stand or X-Men First Class or X-Men Days of Future Past. Like, it was a clear, distinct move away into a slightly different genre. And this is more of a move away. This feels to me like, when I'm watching it, like, this could be Taxi Driver. This could be Mean Streets.
Yeah.
This is clearly what Todd Phillips is trying to emulate, the seamy 70s movies that Scorsese did. This is definitely what Todd Phillips is tapping into here.
Mm-hmm.
De Niro's presence only adds to that. I'm looking incredibly forward to this movie. And don't forget, it's done on a fraction of a budget compared to
what Aquaman
would be on.
It's going to rake it in. It's going to rake it in, I think. It's going to rake it in.
Joker is a hugely popular IP among casual non-comic book fans. Guys like my friend Dion, who don't pick a comic book up, love the Joker. There's a large segment of the audience out there that loves Joker just from his depictions in movies. And these are the kind of people who are going to be queuing up to pay a ticket, and they're going to see this deep, kind of interesting movie, I think.
Yeah.
And it could be really kind of important and breathe a bit of fresh life, and DC have another win under their belt. I can't see this movie flopping financially, and I can't see it flopping critically.
It's going to be, in a sense, similar to, like, the first Daredevil, in that it was a shoestring budget, but you know that you have a huge fan base. So these are one of those films that you know will make double, triple, whatever the budget, you know, the budget it makes. So it's going to be a success regardless. Do you think there'll be a reveal of the actual Joker's face in the movie at all at any point, Dave? Or would you be happy to just be, you know how he wears just the clown makeup? Would you be happy for it to just be...
Do I think he'll fall into acid and turn into the Joker kind of thing?
Oh, yeah, I guess so. Yeah, that's how he gets it, isn't it? Yeah, I guess that's a...
I'd be open to it, but I think probably it won't be that. I think it might be the Joker just having the clown makeup on.
Yeah, I mean, but would you feel like walking out of the cinemas going, oh, a bit empty, I wish I'd seen that at the end?
No, I don't. I don't care about that. Not for this movie. For this movie, I'm in for the psychological take and the sort of disintegration of a person to become the Joker.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's more sort of what I'm into. I'm not really looking for specific plot elements. Like, I don't think Harley should be in it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I want this to sort of be a full, in-depth exploration of the Joker himself. If he walks into a vat of acid and comes out as a Joker, I wouldn't potentially mind that. But I don't think that's going to be the main point of the movie.
Not at all. But, I mean, as a bit of fan service, probably, you know, finally get to see him.
Well, what did Ledger do? Ledger just had scars, didn't he, on his face?
He had the green hair and the white face. So.
Why was that? Wasn't from acid, was it? Wasn't that just
it was just makeup. It was,
I think this will be similar to that. I actually think they're skewing quite closely at times to what Heath Ledger did. I don't think he's a million miles away from sort of the Heath Ledger depiction in the end. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? I think this is, I get the impression that this won't be a million miles away. I think they're going for a similar kind of feel.
Yeah.
And just how they get there will be the interesting part.
Yeah. And if anything. Sorry?
I was just saying, just a hugely damaged person.
Yeah. Yeah.
One thing I think is, I think it'll be more slightly sympathetic at times.
Yes.
He's going to be the hero of the movie. And he'll be evil in the end. But I think it's going to kind of be very slightly sympathetic towards the character.
Kind of like a Breaking Bad kind of thing.
Yes. And I think all these things are really interesting because I think this hasn't been done before. I think DC are going out on a bit of a limb here and they're really backing Todd Phillips' play, and getting Joaquin Phoenix was a masterstroke. And we know Joaquin Phoenix is not the kind of actor who's going to sign up for six or seven movies. He is not interested in that kind of thing. I think he takes the payday, he gives his one big performance, and then he probably walks away from the whole thing.
Okay. Right.
I don't get the impression that we'll be seeing Joaquin Phoenix in other Joker stories. Like, that'll either be Leto or someone else in, you know, the Harley Quinn spin-offs and all the other shit. Like, I think this is kind of a one-and-done kind of thing.
Okay.
That's what the talk of the street is anyway, that Joaquin Phoenix is in no way interested in forming, like, a larger universe.
Yeah, because the danger is there. Like, if you create something really good, like in the movie Joker coming up, and then he just gets put into a comic book kind of scenario, and it kind of, and I don't want to say, like, cheapens it, because, look, there's nothing wrong with, I love comic book movies, you know, but you know what I mean? But you go from one genre, which is like a really thought-provoking psychological thriller, so you go on action-packed comic book. I can imagine that could leave you with a bit of a bad taste in your mouth. So I wouldn't blame Joaquin for just doing the one. Let's hope it's a good one as well.
The talk is that's exactly what he wanted to do. He wants to come in, do his one performance. He knows full well that if this is a good movie, he'll get a nomination. You know, it's a bit of a nomination trophy hunt as well.
Yeah.
Like, this movie has all the looks of looking like a serious, kind of dark crime movie with a very damaged main character. Pretty interesting, really. So, I'm looking forward to it. When does it come out? Do we know? Is it like in November or something? It is this year,
I'd say probably November, December. I'd say it's late,
Fair enough. And then I just recently, tonight before the show, watched with Michelle Men in Black International. Have you caught this?
Oh, no. No.
With Chris Hemsworth and Tessa Thompson.
You watched it? Because I heard you talk about it in the show before about how it's a flop and all that.
Oh, it flopped hugely. Yeah. But it came out on streaming and we just watched it tonight just before the show, just out of interest.
Yeah.
Michelle said the same thing as me. Like, it's not bad. It just feels like it's playing off all the old cliches. Yeah. And it's all been done before, and Will Smith's not in it, and it's not terrible by any means, but it's not great. Like, it's 7 at a stretch, maybe 6.5.
It seems like a straight-to-video, like in the old days, a straight-to-video movie.
But it wasn't meant to be. It clearly tries to set itself up for a franchise at the end of the movie, and it bombed at the box office hard.
I think a lot of that has to do with you mentioned it on the show, and the lack of marketing for it.
Yeah. Poor marketing.
That just kind of, it came and went, and it was announced quickly that they were going to do it, and before you knew it, Hemsworth and Thompson were filmed and cast, and they were doing it, and it was done. It's like it just seemed to come together really quickly, and I think it wasn't given enough time to breathe and for there to be like a bit of a groundswell for interest in it.
I don't think there was much of an appetite for the franchise either. Yeah. I think, Will Smith heard it. Tessa Thompson and Chris Hemsworth are fine. He's very likable. She's good. But it doesn't do anything new. It's all done before back in the 90s, and it feels like it's just a reheat. Very similar to Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
It's a better movie than Ghostbusters, but the newer one.
I enjoyed Ghostbusters, but I
hated the newer one.
Really? Like, yeah.
Very stale reheat of a very old franchise that brought nothing.
It doesn't compare to the original, of course, but what made Men in Black so successful? I actually bypassed that whole franchise and the success of it,
Will Smith was huge at the time. He could do no wrong.
It was Will Smith. It was basically Will Smith.
It was coming off Independence Day. Yeah. It's an interesting movie. Like, it's funny. It had a funny sci-fi sort of take. Didn't take itself too seriously. The first two Men in Blacks are pretty good. The third one's a huge stretch.
I guess it's probably off the back of the success of The X-Files as well. There was a whole thing about conspiracy, aliens. Maybe that's kind of what...
It's a lighthearted take on it too. Those movies, and neither did this movie. Like, this movie is not terrible. Like, you watch it and you're like, oh, it's good. Like, it hits a lot of the very expected bases, but it doesn't really go anywhere different.
Yeah.
And it's that feeling of, like, when they did Independence Day Resurgence, it's like, was there any appetite to bring this back and you've done a pretty lackluster job as well. Like, you haven't made it seem... Kind of when they bring these old properties back, I think they've got to try to make it a bit more interesting. They're just kind of relying on the brand. Like, any marketing of Men in Black International leans so heavily on just Men in Black. Like, there's a new Men in Black movie. I don't think people were that excited. I don't think audiences were excited. I think Avatar will face the same problem when it comes out. Like, despite the fact that the original movie was the highest grossing movie until just recently of all time, I think that the franchise has not breathed any new life, and I think it's kind of dead on arrival. Like, I think James Cameron will face an uphill battle to get people excited about the Avatar franchise when it's been like 12 years.
Yeah. I think also as well, it's the audience's interests have changed and progressed since then. You know what I mean? We get this thing with the, you know, let's dwell amongst the comic book movies and stuff. Yes, it's like Marvel doing this whole interconnected universe, and people now for action and for popcorn films are kind of used to those big and fun things, whereas now, like, you look at Men in Black, which I see as like smaller franchises because they're just self-contained, aren't they? They don't expand anywhere else. They don't, you know, they don't go into any other IPs in any sense. It would have been cool if what was Men in Black? Was that Dark Horse or?
It was a comic. I didn't even know it was a comic book, but it said in the credits to this, based in the Malibu Comics.
Malibu, wow.
No, I didn't even know until tonight that it was even a comic. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, really? Okay.
Based on an original comic. I had no idea of that.
Oh, I knew, but I didn't know which publisher. But anyway, I think it's because it's so self-contained, it's not interesting anymore. You know what I mean? So,
but that's a shame as well. Can I say that, like, for all the success of Marvel, like, really, you don't need to have this huge interconnected universe to have a good movie.
No, not at all. But I mean, that does help with these action things. It's hard to say. Look, I'm talking from the side of a comic book fan, so that's actually what interests me. Whereas your casual viewer or the person who loves going to the movies but isn't necessarily a comic book fan, they probably couldn't care less about it being interconnected, you know what I mean? But, but I mean, that's just...
It's interesting. Like, Marvel have done a fantastic job of success, but I can't think of anyone who's emulated. The closest would be Fast and the Furious.
Yeah.
You know, they've done the same sort of thing, but even there, it's a pale shadow of what Marvel have done. Marvel have just done it really successfully. You know, they've done a particularly good job.
Yeah.
And everyone who's tried to emulate that has failed. Yeah. You know, like DC tried, obviously. Warner's tried.
Yeah.
Harry Potter has tried.
Yeah.
But the box
office. Harry Potter is a good example. But that's based on the novels. So there's a whole world. There is a whole universe to that.
Oh, there is.
With the Fantastic Beasts.
The more recent movie didn't do well at all.
Yeah, true. Well, that is hard. It's kind of like J.K. Rowling's second album, you know what I mean? You know, after the success of the first one, Harry Potter, trying to follow it up on that. But, you know, another question to you, Dave, and I know we're still on this point. Taking us to the Aliens, Predator, Terminator franchise, those sorts of franchises persevere, you know, if you put them side by side with Men in Black, say, or Independence Day. Now, what is different in those films?
My opinion, Predator and Alien have such strong monster villains. They're so iconic.
Yeah.
Like the Alien figure is, it sells itself. It's so powerful. Yeah. And with Predator, they're so powerful visually to look at. Like, there's branding just in the look visually. Yeah. Men in Black, really, it's just guys and girls in black suits. The aliens are interchangeable almost. They clutter the screen, but they don't really stick in the imagination.
Yeah.
So it's really just Will Smith in a black suit that sold Men in Black for many years.
Yeah.
And now they've tried to do Tessa Thompson and Chris Hemsworth. And really, it's not that... You know, with the neuralizer thing, it's just not that. It just doesn't have the same kick. Whereas the Alien, the classic Alien, you know, with the configuration, the shape, and the look, is so iconic. And the same with Predator.
That's true.
It's so iconic. So they retain, that's my point of view. I think that they're just really IPs that visually are very striking mm-hmm. and have stuck in our imaginations. But Alien movies haven't done huge numbers, and Predator movies have been on the decline too, number-wise. So all of these things, like I would describe Alien as a failing or fading franchise, and Predator, based on the last Predator movie, as we discussed on a recent show we did, performed terribly at the box office and performed terribly critically.
Yeah.
But nevertheless, your Aliens and Predators will survive.
Mm. Whereas your Men in Black won't, really.
No, I think Men in Black, they will probably reboot it like in 10 years.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Or 5 to 10 years. But they'll try again. But I think that they tried in this movie. Like, I quite like watching these movies where I knew the expectations were way down. So I said to Michelle, let's just put it on and let's just see. It's not terrible, but it's not great. It's quite forgettable. Mm-hmm. You know, it's probably six to 6.5 out of 10.
But you enjoyed yourself while you watched it.
Yeah, I had an enjoyable time. No, it wasn't as good as like Men in Black 2, and I would say Men in Black 3 was better than this. It's got a certain flatness to it. Like it's not great. Like I said, I think 6 to 6.5 is right where it belongs.
Okay,
and it didn't make any money, so there's not going to be a sequel.
I can't say it's a shame because I don't really care.
Yeah, that's fair enough. Now, did you watch the Terminator Dark Fate trailer?
No, I wanted to, actually. I've seen a lot of it around online and stuff. I just haven't been able to sit down, and I'm very excited to see it. I follow Gabriel Luna, who is some people know he's Ghost Rider as well on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. He's the Terminator in this.
He's familiar, right? So that's the guy who's going to play Ghost Rider on Hulu.
Yeah.
He played him in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. too, didn't he?
Yeah. So he, I followed. I mean, not like I didn't follow him every day and stuff, but he was posting up stuff. He was bulking up for it as well.
He was stalking him. Were you outside his gym?
But he, even Arnie actually came to see him, gave him some tips in the gym as well to, you know, kind of bulk up and stuff. So he took it very seriously. Obviously, it's an honor to be a Terminator as well.
Oh, yeah.
So I would really want to see it. I haven't seen it yet, but I will. I definitely will. Have you seen it?
Yeah, I watched it just before the show.
Did you like it?
I did. And shout out to Eric and Jimmy Rule the Galaxy, because he pointed it out to me just before I came on. He sent me the link to it, actually. I've said before on the show so many times, Michelle is the biggest Terminator fan out there. Mm. And whatever happens, my fate is that I'll be seeing this movie in cinemas, regardless of how it performs at the box office, regardless of critical opinion. I will be seeing it pretty much on opening night, because it's a direct sequel to Judgment Day. Now, Linda Hamilton looks great.
She does. Actually, I have seen bits of her there, yeah.
Yeah, look, it's a pretty neat trailer. It shows a lot of the movie, though, I will say that. Like, when you're watching the trailer, it shows a ton of the movie. Way too much. Mm. Way too much, in my opinion. Very similar to Spider-Man Homecoming, where I feel like I'm watching the spine of the movie.
Yeah.
So the trailer does give a lot away. Yeah. But it seems cool.
So Gabriel Luna, he's kind of like a hybrid, isn't he? He's like a T2, but he also has an exoskeleton or something, doesn't he?
Well, yeah, that don't explain it. But definitely there's the woman Terminator who's come back, or will, I assume, come back to help protect Linda Hamilton's character, Sarah Connor, and the child that's with her. She's also enhanced.
Okay.
Because Sarah Connor says to her, something happens, and she says, "Oh, I've never seen one like you. You're almost human." And then she says, "I am human, just enhanced," or something.
Oh.
So I think both of them are sort of like a mixture.
Tell you, I'm pumped, Dave. I've got to. Yeah. Have you watched was it Sarah Chronicles, whatever?
Yeah, the Sarah Connor Chronicles. I really enjoyed them.
Did you? Yeah, and you've seen all the other Terminator films as well?
Yeah, I've seen them all. Like, Michelle's watched them all, like, countless times.
I've got to see the Christian Bale one and the...
It's shit.
Oh, okay, good. I saw the one with, the one for, she's from Game of Thrones, the last one.
Yeah. Terminator Genesis.
I thought it was okay. It was good. They had money in there.
I thought it wasn't too bad at all. It was like, fun. It got hammered, like, by people. I was I enjoyed it a lot more than I enjoyed Salvation.
Yeah.
And to be fair, I watched Terminator 3... a while ago with Michelle. It's better than Terminator 3, Rise of the Machines.
Oh, yeah, see, that I can't remember. That's with the female Terminator, right? And she's...
Yeah, female Terminator, and Claire Danes is in it.
Oh, yeah. Yes, I want to rewatch
it. It's got one good scene at the end when the bombs are going off. Okay. That's the only good scene. It tries to mirror Judgment Day and just fails.
Okay. Well, it's exciting that this one is a direct sequel to Judgment Day. So that'd be really. Oh, I'm going to have to go watch it in cinemas as well, I reckon.
We'll watch Judgment Day before we go in as well. Uh-huh. And Tim Miller, the Deadpool 1 director, is directing it.
It should be good. It should be good, Dan. Like, he knows what he's doing with action films, so... Yeah.
And James Cameron is pretty heavily involved in it, too. He took a very active producing role in this movie. So, I mean, I'm interested in it.
Yeah,
now, segueing into more Arnold news, not voicing Terminator in Mortal Kombat 11 download pack, although it does bear his likeness. I can't believe we got Arnold, a member of the production team, tweeted before it was revealed that he's not actually voicing the character, but he's got his likeness. Do you like the way I stay on top of the Mortal Kombat updates for the show?
Because I know that you're a big Mortal Kombat fan. Have you played it with Predator yet, or what?
No, I haven't, because my fucking TV's not working, and my office is filled with boxes, so I haven't been able to access anything, but... It's okay. I mean, I'm definitely getting this download pack with Terminator, though. I think it's awesome.
I think I also saw as well...
Spawn in it, man.
Spawn, yeah, that's it. I was about to say, I saw a picture of Spawn in there as well.
Looks fucking wicked, doesn't it?
This is crazy. Like, so is Mortal Kombat expanded now to other characters? I thought it was just Has that always done that, or is this just the one?
It's done that since 10. I don't know if it's done it before, but since in 10 they put in Predator, an alien.
That's awesome.
I think Jason was in there. So they've sort of like...
Any Marvel characters or no?
Not to my knowledge, no. Okay. They did do Mortal Kombat versus DC, but, you know, like 6 or 7 years ago.
Okay.
So they did a full-on like crossover between the two.
Yeah,
it was awesome. You can fight Sub-Zero versus Batman, Batman and stuff. It was pretty cool. Now, Mortal Kombat are a pretty cool franchise, man. Like, I'll be picking up this. I mean, I hope they bring out Predator again too.
Yeah, I mean, I'm very excited at when you're saying about Predator being it and stuff. But you know, to be totally honest, I think I'm only familiar with Mortal Kombat 1. I think when it came out.
Wow.
I think the original when it came out, and I haven't touched it. Well, I'm not much of a gamer. I know you know, but I do appreciate it. I love the characters are cool.
I mean, it's fun, you know. Like,
I just remember it being hyper violent as a young kid. That was just awesome.
It's definitely still violent. Like, I mean, it's violent, but I've always felt people got too carried away with the violence. Like, it's like...
Oh, I mean, it is what it is. I mean, there are, you know, there's violence everywhere, right? So
yeah, like, I don't know. I've got my own favourite characters because I played a lot of Mortal Kombat 2 and 3 very stoned in the 90s.
Yeah.
Like, I played a lot of hours, 1, 2 a.m. at friends' houses, you know, blanket on, just battling through with Nightwolf. Like, I used to sometimes... wake up almost in a daze thinking I was Nightwolf. I would wake up and I'd be like, man, where am I? What's going on? Like, I am Nightwolf. It's like, I used to say to my friends, like, I'm only playing as Nightwolf. And they'd say, Dave, and I was really stoned. I'd say, I'm only playing as Nightwolf, guys. And that's the mood I'm in. And they were like, dude, Nightwolf doesn't have that many special powers. And I go, yeah, but I like his flaming axe.
Right. I don't know if...
He had a throwing axe that he threw.
Okay.
And it was green. I used to love it. And I was like, I used to freak it out like constantly.
I just remember Sub-Zero. That's the only guy.
Sub-Zero. So, yeah, but Sub-Zero is such a cheap character. Like, but yeah, he is.
He was a mainstream. Is he like one of the main ones?
And he's one of the easiest ones.
Oh, okay. Like,
yeah.
Oh, that's it. I remember Mortal Kombat being so difficult with the bloody moves. I'm only talking about, I'm only talking about Mortal Kombat in the arcades. Like, I never had it on a console. Right. It was like playing it, you know. Yeah. After school, we'd just go down the road, and they had it there. But, yeah, that was yonks ago. But, yeah.
It's a long time ago. Dude, one of my favourite memories before we get off this, in terms of gaming, is we used to, at school, cut from school and go up to, like, a little sort of milk bar or whatever it was, like, and they had the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles arcade game there.
Uh-huh.
And you could play as – so they had four – controllers, you could get four guys on it playing as all the turtles.
Oh, wow.
It was so awesome, dude. Like, we used to come there, like, two or three of us and play as the characters, like, pumping the coins in. Like,
that's another thing I've got to get into, like, the TMNT. Like, do you collect the comics as well? Like, Eastman stuff? And
I have pretty much all the Eastman and Laird original comics.
Wow.
I'm big into the Turtles, but I've really let myself down and just fallen completely away from the IDW stuff,
uh-huh.
which I think is really good. IDW have done a fantastic job of rebranding the comic franchise and really pushing it forward,
yep,
while also putting out great collections of the originals.
Yeah.
They've done a really good job with the Teenage Ninja Turtles.
You got some hardcovers, Dave? Or?
I've got 3 hardcovers of the ultimate collections of the original Turtles.
Nice.
I used to play the Turtles role-playing game in the 80s. Yeah. For a couple of years there, it was like Turtles, Punisher, and I was just happy. Like, I was so fucking happy, man.
See, you know? I feel that, yeah, that animated series kind of really hurt the Turtles in a lot of ways. I know what it made, it exposed them. Like, you know, the world knows about them.
It made the creators a lot of money.
So, but, like, it was by no means, and that was my first impression of them, and it's by no means
a kiddie sort of version.
Yeah, it's nothing like that at all, from what I understand. So,
the original comics are much, they're black and white, and they're grimy, and they're gritty, and they're fucking cool, man. Yeah. Like, funnily enough, though, like, they kept doing the animated series for a long time after it peaked, because the Turtles did a kind of boom and bust thing. The Turtles were so huge that really at a certain point the only way they could go was down.
Yeah, right.
And they kept doing the show for a while, and later seasons of the show, they really upped the sort of adult feel, and they shoot it all, what they call it, Red Turtles, and the skies are all red, and everything's a bit more sort of, I don't know, it's just a bit better. Like the original Turtles, I agree, the original Turtles cartoon is like super kiddie, and it's tough to watch if you're, you know, an adult.
Yeah,
but, it is. But I've got a soft place in my heart for the Turtles because, like, for me, that they were, I think that, like, without meaning to get fucking, like, you know, too deep, I just loved their story of how they went from being little turtles, mutants, ninjas, and they're 4 brothers. It's a cool story. You've got
Squid. Oh, they're brothers. I didn't know that. Okay.
They're all brothers, man. It's a brother turtles, man. And they've got April. And they're trained by the Rat, Splinter. I guess it's the best story of all time. And they've got Shredder and Krang the Alien Brain.
Mm.
Yeah, and, like, Raphael, my favourite, the hothead. Then you've got Leonardo, the leader. Donatello's the science guy. And Mikey's the fun one. You know.
I don't know who. I think Raphael as well. Yeah, Raphael would probably be.
I'm a huge Raphael fan. Like, it's no fucking surprise. He goes off in fucking rages. You know, it's awesome. Like, but Leonardo, I also like Leonardo as the leader, and he's kind of got more of a cool head.
Mm-hmm. The Cyclops, the Scott Summers.
Yeah. There's a lot of the Turtles are a really good example of a really cool concept that's very durable. It's kind of like Spider-Man. Like, Spider-Man is so durable as a concept.
Yeah.
It's so basic. And Turtles have that sort of similar feel for me. I think it's like a Batman. You can kind of see why it became popular because it's kind of got a universal appeal. Yeah, no, I love the Turtles, man. Like, I do want to get more into it and at some point read all the... Because I was reading the IDW comics for quite some time and really enjoying them, and I just fell away from reading them.
Have you watched the Michael Bay... Is it the Michael Bay films? No.
I've seen them all, yeah.
Are they good?
Yeah. Not really. Like, to me, it's not really the Turtles. Like, I mean, I don't like the look of the Turtles in them, really. That's my biggest gripe. And it's also a bit shitty Michael Bay sort of movie-making. They're not great, no. Yeah. Like, and I really hate the new fucking animated series that's out.
There's a new one. Okay.
Fucking terrible as well. Like, so I'm not like a fan of all the choices the Turtles make. For me, I do go back to the 80s animated, and they also did a very good one in the early 2000s animated.
Yep.
But, yeah, I'm not a big fan of, like, some of the iterations of the Turtles. Like, they've been done so many times that, like, sometimes, like, Kevin Eastman was talking just recently about doing a Netflix dark series about the Turtles.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, yeah, that'd be fucking awesome.
That'd be good,
By the way, the Turtles were, I'm not sure if they were in Mortal Kombat, but they were in a recent fighting game. I forget which one it was.
Oh, that would be good, Mortal Kombat.
Might have been Mortal Kombat. There was a recent game where you could play as the Turtles. I can't remember which one it was. Maybe it was Mortal Kombat. Now, anyway, the Sony Marvel split's official.
It's done and dusted?
Well, supposedly.
Is it?
And Sony has also purchased Insomniac Games. For me, this is urgent news. This is the game developer that brought us the Spider-Man game on PS4. I need to get a fucking PS4 and stop fucking around with my life, right?
I thought you got one already. What happened?
No, I didn't. I didn't get one, man, because, like, I didn't fucking get one because I have a plan to... I've got 2 Xbox Ones. And I'm just going to give my older Xbox One to Michelle's mother and just purchase a PS4.
We had a deal, Dave. You're going to go get the PS4. I was going to get the $10 AVP Xbox 360 game.
All right.
No, I was only joking. Yeah, I did. I play. You know how talking with Brian? No, I was only joking because that's only $10, and you've got to fork out to get a PS4. But
I'm waiting for a sale. Actually, waiting for a decent discount. I only want it because it's got the fucking Spider-Man game. But then I'll also have the option that I can get the two streams of games. Mm. It makes sense now. Sony have bought this game studio.
Yep.
The Spider-Man game was fantastic. There's going to be more games along those lines, so I may as well get involved.
Do you think the Marvel-Sony split will have any effect on the quality of the Spider-Man games coming out later on now? Or?
No, because Sony made the last one.
Okay, Marvel had no involvement in that at all?
I don't believe so. Insomniac Games developed it. I don't know the ins and outs of it all, but like...
I was just wondering if it was kind of like the movies and stuff, if they gave advice or... But yeah, okay.
I don't know. But like, for example, Marvel didn't give advice on the Spider-Verse movie.
No, they didn't. And that was really good. Yeah.
And the Spider-Man game has had really good reviews from like casual gamers to hardened Spider-Man fans. So, I don't care. I'll get it eventually. It's all right. I'll be okay. But I do want to bring this up while we're talking about this.
Yes.
Sony are really talking about a Spider-Verse series of TV shows as well as movies. So,
wow.
So they're being quite ambitious here. This is the part of the story where I think they need some credit to be shown. They did a great job with Spider-Verse, okay? Fantastic job.
Yep.
Okay, and Lord and Miller are talking about a series of shows that they're going to develop in the Spider-Verse. Now, will they have Tom Holland to anchor it? Because I think the problem before was they couldn't get Spider-Man in like Venom due to their different level, but now they can.
Yeah.
And so a Venom movie, a Venom sequel, to me, with Spider-Man in it, is so much more appealing.
Actually, as well, did you hear? Apparently, there was footage of Tom Holland filmed for the first Venom movie, but apparently Marvel told them they couldn't use it, so they had to cut it out. So that's another.
That could be part of what broke the deal down, because Sony are going, we own this character. We bought this character.
Yeah.
We want to maximize him in our spin-offs. Mm. And if they can cut a deal with Tom Holland, I still think that we could be getting some very good movies.
We're still getting Morbius, aren't we? And
Morbius is still happening.
Okay.
And Venom 2 is happening.
Venom 2, okay.
We know those two movies are happening, and there's also talk of other movies, for example, the Silver Sable movie, the Black Cat movie.
And there's also an offshoot of the female spider people animated as well.
Yes. That's also – there's going to be a sequel to the Spider-Verse movie, and there's going to be a spin-off movie with, like, Spider-Gwen.
Spider-Gwen, yeah.
Silk and all that, which I look very forward to. So,
me too. I'm a big Spider-Man fan, and there's definitely enough characters in the Spider-Man gallery. So as long as they do it right, be happy.
Exactly. Now, something else that's been done right, I didn't know this during the week. I was doing a lot of fucking research during the week on this 2099 event that's coming up for Marvel starting in November. And I found out that Ghost Rider's involved and Punisher's involved.
Yeah.
And Conan, which I think looks stupid, the Conan one. But Ghost Rider and Punisher, give it up for these guys. Like, you know.
Hang on, sorry, Dave, as well, though. But having said that with Conan as well, I did see a tweet by Jerry Duggan, who's going to – and he did say, look, you know, whoa, hold your horses. Like, don't get nervous. It's a story that only we could do in 2099. I think you'll like it. It's so I don't think he messes around with anything. So
I like Jerry Duggan a lot. I like Jerry Duggan a hell of a lot. I want to get Jerry Duggan on the show, so I'm open to it, man. I'm very open to this. But I'm starting to get into this phase now, Ray, where I'm just getting real excited to be alive again, because we've got, like, Ghost Rider content coming out. We've got Moon Knight content coming out, Punisher content coming out. Finally, things are fucking turning our way,
Ghost Rider, Hulu series. We live in a golden age, Dave. I'm like you, so happy at that. And I thought the bubble would have burst after the departure of RDJ and Chris Evans. You know that did close out a chapter, but it just looks so exciting. Still, it's amazing.
There's a fair bit of bullshit out there as well, but I'm prepared to put up with the Ms. Marvels of the world that I'm not at all interested in. No, but I am, because I always say I believe in a balanced diet. Yeah,
absolutely.
And put all these products out there, and when they've started tapping into these street level heroes, which I know, Ray, you're a fan of as well.
Absolutely.
Ghost Rider, your Punisher, your Moon Knights, all these guys, man. Mm-hmm. I'm like, hell yeah, bring it on.
Exactly.
Now, I wanted to talk to you while we're on this topic. Look, I am highly, highly excited about Ghost Rider on Hulu. I keep talking about it. But we know that in like the last week or so, the Moon Knight news came out that there's going to be a Moon Knight TV show.
Yeah.
I was thrilled for myself, but also for you guys over at Internet. I'm like, this is what you guys have been waiting for.
Oh, it was crazy. It felt like, you know, New Year's Eve times a million. You know what I mean? That kind of buzz. It was surreal when it was announced. I can even remember what I was doing. I got a message from one of the loonies. Mm. I didn't really believe. I was at my folks' place, of all places. And, just get this thing. It's like, oh, what's going on? And then to see, I logged on to Twitter, saw Agent M, who's a big agent for Marvel on Twitter, Ryan Penagos. Yeah. He is tweeting all this stuff, and this is crazy. So, yeah. Now,
that's awesome, and I'm on a high too. But you know, as like the running, you host the site, on your message boards, man, there's been a large chunk of people who are seem real disconcerted that, in fact, it's not going to be R-rated.
Oh, Dave, this is, I have to, and I think I posted something. Look, I'm all for everyone to obviously voice their opinions and stuff. I do like that, but I do need to mediate stuff as well. Sure. And when there are hundreds of people saying the same thing, like, oh, well, we might as well not have a show if it's not R-rated, I've got to roll my eyes at that. Seriously.
That's insane.
That, I mean, the whole point of us fans as well, hoping and wanting something and then finally getting, why, hashtag, you know, friggin' biting the hand that feeds you. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
It gets my blood boiling.
Was it R-rated? Was Punisher on Netflix R-rated? I have no idea.
I'm not sure.
I don't think it was, man.
No, like, one of the loonies as well, he actually cited a lot of the Christopher Nolan Batman movies. They're not R-rated.
R-rated.
Just get a grip, you know. Chill out.
I don't think they're R-rated either.
No. So just, you know, take a step back. Take a deep breath.
You can get away with a lot of violence and still get a PG-13 rating in the States.
Yeah.
It's quite possible. It's sex scenes that make it R-rated more than violence.
Yeah. The first thing I cited, like I had this discussion with some of the loonies, was because we had a guest, he hosts the Venomaniacs, the Venom site.
Yeah.
And I asked Orion, I said, Orion, look, was the Venom movie, was that R-rated? And he said, no, it wasn't. And I remember it being, you know, had a decent amount of violence there, if I can say that. You know what I mean? Yeah. It did what it needed to do. I'm sure Moon Knight and this thing, Dave, where they're all distilling it to, we have to have this face cutting scene. I mean, that is just one little fleck of Moon Knight's backstory.
I've read a fair chunk of Moon Knight. He's not that violent.
He isn't.
It's not like it's that graphic all the time, kind of thing. Like he's a vigilante. And he's a bit unhinged.
Yep.
But I don't know. You could easily do a show that's PG-13 with Moon Knight.
Absolutely. You look at
with like issues of his psychological disorders and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Is true real or a construct of his imagination?
There's so much to plunder with it. You look at the Mentron, 30 odd issues. You look at Mark Spector Moon Knight, 60 issues. But that's a fair chunk, and that has no face cutting, no hyper violence. Yet some of these fans are still harping on about we need to have hyper violence. It's like, no, you need good actors, you need a good story, you need a good production. That's what makes a good show, not bloody violence. And when did we start, and I can tell you when did we ever start getting so fixated on ratings? This never came about until Deadpool paved the way. And now everyone's going, oh, but this can be R-rated now. Let's do that. Look, cast us back a few years, none of us were thinking about that. Everyone was happy as pie having a movie on Punisher or whatever, or Dead, you know, whatever, and just not questioning the rating. But now they are. They're just too picky.
They are picky. I mean, I think a Punisher, it's hard to avoid an R rating sometimes. I think Punisher Warzone may have been R rated. Maybe was R rated.
Yeah, that was very violent.
It was very violent. Yeah. But I will say this, a TV show like, say, for example, Daredevil, 3 seasons of Daredevil, you could do about the equal same level of violence in Moon Knight and still get a PG-13 rating.
Exactly. I think that was one of the points. I was saying that wasn't R rated.
I'm going to put something out there. Who's going to play my favourite, Marlene? Because, you know, I'm a big Marlene fan, and you're going to say it now. I'm not going to fuck around here. You're going to need to get a blonde with big breasts. That's what you're going to need to get.
Well, the shots of Marlene that you've shown me, Dave, yeah, they do seem to cater towards those two aspects.
You know, I'm a fan of Marlene. I've always been a fan of Marlene.
That will be very interesting. Look, I'm just as excited about the supporting casting as Moon Knight as well. Like
Frenchie,
Jenna, Crawley will be cool, but Marlene obviously as well. And you're going to have to get someone who's strong, who's
Crawley's
beautiful.
Been drunk, isn't he? He's always got the flies around him.
Him, and he's got the tea bag. He carries around a tea bag because he's too cheap to buy another one.
And he's just like, he was rich once, wasn't he? He lost all his money or something. Is that right?
No, he wasn't rich. He was a book salesman. But he had the vice of gambling, and he lost it all, and he lost his wife, his job, blah, blah, blah. So,
And let's not forget, you're going to have to cast Moon Knight himself, and there was rumours today.
Yeah.
What's the guy's name again?
Shia LaBeouf.
Yeah, a fuckwit, actually, frankly. Like a guy that I've got almost no time for. I hope he's not going to be Moon Knight, right?
Not my personal choice. But, look, I'm happy to... I'm happy we've got the show. We'll see what happens. Of course, you can get massive miscasts. Shia may be edging for me towards that.
That could be just nothing more than a very...
I think it's a rumour.
That came from We Got This Covered, and they put out a lot of bullshit in their time, because I see their Facebook stuff come up all the time, and it's usually meaningless clickbait, you know?
Yeah, I'm not worried by that article, let's just say that. So,
Fair enough.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and Hulu has hinted they will become a home for R-rated Disney material as well.
See, and this has just stoked the fire, Dave. This has just stoked the fire for all the fans out there going, Moon Knight should have been on Hulu.
Well, anyway, but it's not going to be. I think it's going to be good in the Disney Plus service. Do we know when it's coming? Like, do we have any sort of...
2021. I reckon it will be the second half of that, because if you look at the programming... I reckon they've got the likes of Hawkeye and Miss Marvel coming out before.
Sure.
So that's going to take up a lot of the 2021, the first half of the year. So I reckon at the end.
So Hawkeye's getting a TV show as well, isn't he?
Yeah, and I think they're going to introduce, I think it's mostly Kate Bishop. They're introducing,
Love that character. Have you read The Fraction Run of Hawkeye?
Oh, yeah, I love it. I've got it in hardcovers. I love it. Me too.
It's fantastic. Glad to hear you got some hardcovers there, Ray.
Jeremy Renner as well. I know he's voiced a lot of interest. I'd like to see him in the TV show for at least a fair bit.
Well, in The Fraction Run, they're very much playing off each other.
Yeah.
I mean, some people think it was all Kate Bishop, but it wasn't. Go read the fucking series. It was about 50-50. And if they want to even get more realistic about it, the artist they had, David Aja, had a kid and couldn't keep up with the artwork, so they leaned more on the Kate Bishop character with Annie Wu doing the artwork. Mm. And if you doubt my words, go listen to the Fraction interviews on Word Balloon.
Yeah.
So it was very much a 50-50 comic between the two of them. They're both very, very good.
Oh, no, absolutely. I'm just worried that Jeremy Renner, being a movie star, won't hang around too long in the TV show. But you never know. I mean, hopefully he does.
Well, I think they're going to do that one season of 8 to 12 episodes, you know.
Yeah, I hope so.
They pay them. I'm sure he'll be paid handsomely for it as well.
True. I guess they've got the other big stars in there as well. So, yeah, makes sense.
We'll see. I mean, they've got in Falcon and Winter Soldier, they've got the guys playing the roles. So. Yeah.
And they got your favourites, Wanda and Vision. They got you know.
So. I honestly couldn't care less about that show, man.
I'm interested. I like the scenario, Dave, this whole sitcom kind of.
It looks like
Tom King kind of. You read the Tom King Vision thing, right?
Yeah, I did. Yeah. But, like, I did read it, Ray, but, like, that was about enough for me, you know, like. I'm not a Vision guy, dude, and I'm not Scarlet Witch.
Scarlet Witch is
slightly better than Vision. Slightly better than Vision.
I wanted to say, because you mentioned this in the previous shows as well, and I wanted to I was shouting at the speakers.
Really?
No, I wasn't shouting. No.
Possibly you've said that was controversial.
No. You didn't say anything controversial. But you're saying how you didn't like Vision and Scarlet Witch. I liked, if anything, I wouldn't say I liked it that much, but Vision, the white Vision in the 90s, do you remember him? The ghost Vision? He was all white.
I've seen it, and I thought it was a fucking Z-less move.
Well, here was my.
I wasn't reading any stuff in the 90s, then, but okay. I have seen it in reprints, yeah. And my reaction was turn the page. even crapper version of Vision.
No, to me, that was better. I mean, I was introduced to Vision through that. So, for me, the Vision is meant to be white and a ghost and, you know,
really?
Wafting through, but not this multicolored. I know Adam, the computer crowd, said he liked the colors of Vision, which a shout out to Adam. He did a great job in last episode.
He did do a good job, didn't he? He came in. Yeah. I was firing hot last episode, and Adam was just absorbing the blasts, man.
He was. He absorbed it all, Dave. You threw everything at him. You were hitting winners from baseline, and he was freaking just returning them.
But like the thing with me, Ray, is, and I'll be brutally honest here. During the 90s, when I was reading comics, Avengers was not considered cool. Like, it was not considered a cool company. And I was openly scorned. Like, if I saw Vision or anything, I would just be like, these are just joke characters. Yeah. They're just weak. And, like, yes, they became much more popular in the 2000s.
Yep.
And then you obviously, they became popular through the movies. But, no, there's still a chunk of me that just thinks when it gets to the lesser members of the Avengers, I'm just like, just turn it off. But that's not to say, I'm sure... There are some good storylines in there. I just have never had any time for them, you know.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
But anyway, so I don't know. Like, we've got a lot of stuff coming. Adam the Computer announced, he sent me these links, man. Joker Predator 2-packs and Green Lantern versus Predator. They're basically, did you check out this storyline, Ray? They're basically toy packs with Joker Predator being like a merge of the two, like Joker.
No, wow. Hey,
it's like a Jokerized Predator, basically. Wow. And then it's like a toy you can buy.
It's just a toy figure, is it? It's not.
It's a toy figure of a Jokerized Predator.
Oh, that's a pretty cool combination.
Well, it's like in, I think, it was Emperor Joker or something, where heaps of people got Jokerized, and in this one, Predator's been Jokerized.
Oh, the link I see, it's got the alien Jokerized.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. The alien, all right.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Oh yeah, there's and the Predator is Green Lanternized.
Oh really? Okay.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. I mean, it's cool. It sounds like someone's just sitting there trying to throw stuff at the wall.
Pretty much. Yeah.
So Predator has got a Green Lantern ring. Is that it?
Well, is yellow in that one? I don't know what that means. They've got different colors for something.
Traditionally, Green Lanterns were vulnerable to the color yellow. I can tell you that.
Well, yeah, the Predator's got the lantern-esque emblem on his chest, and he's covered in yellow.
What do you think of that? I think this is just, we're almost stretching here.
Oh, it is. Look, there's no backing for it. It's just like someone's wet dream, but it looks pretty cool.
A Jokerized alien. Yeah. Does alien really need to get Jokerized to be any more dangerous?
No, it just looks like he's got a little bit of lippy on. Basically.
It's just weird. Now, you had some stuff here, Marvel looking to add Werewolf by Night to the MCU. Can you explain what this means?
I don't know how much info is this or just a rumor, but the idea is that, like, since they introduced or announced Blade to be in the MCU, and since there's this talk, obviously, Moon Knight in Disney Plus, but how the Disney Plus shows are back doors and the characters will make their way into the MCU, that there's an actual supernatural element that Marvel are trying to form within the MCU. So there's been some talk that Jack Russell, a.k.a. Werewolf by Night, is being considered to being introduced somehow. So
I've never really met any Werewolf by Night ever. So.
Oh, he's really cool. Doug Mensch, I've read a lot, the first volume, collected edition. So Doug Mensch, if I can get the name right, I think it's Mike Plug or Dave Plug.
Right. Okay.
Very cool artist, Dave. I think you'll really dig it. Very kind of 70s. Anyway, there's not much to him. He's just a werewolf, basically.
Is he a good guy or is he a bad werewolf?
He's kind of like the olden day Incredible Hulk, where he can't control it. So wherever he is, and it's like, oh, shit, there's a moon, full moon.
That's a pretty cool concept, though.
Yeah, it'd be really cool. I'd love to see him on there, obviously, with the Moon Knight ties.
And didn't Moon Knight debut in...
Yes, Werewolf by Night. Yeah, yeah, number 32.
Have you got that issue?
No, I haven't, but I think I will never get it now because it's skyrocketed because of bloody the TV show.
When they say skyrocketed, how much would it go for? Like a few thousand dollars or more than that?
No, I mean, Scott from 20th Century Geek, who we guested on, he posted something up. No, it's like up in the 300, 400. It's not too bad. But I don't know how much a 9.8 CG whatever slabbed version would be. But they're pretty pricey now.
For listeners out there, because we've got listeners who are very casual, can you explain what slabbed means? Like when they say it's a slabbed comic?
Oh, look, I'm by no means an expert, but slabbing a comic is basically you acquire a comic in its best form, I guess, in mint and near mint condition, and you forever seal it, hermetically seal it in a plastic sleeve or a slab, and it gets graded by the I can't remember
the CGC. Right?
The CGC. Yeah. There's an actual measured, standardized certification. And you have to send it off to them, and they'll mark it whether it's a 9.6 or a 2.4 or whatever. And then they'll give you that rating.
So you send it away to them, and they mail it back to you or something?
Yeah, you have to. That's what I think for Aussies, unless you actually just buy the slabs, to actually get your comic slabbed is going to be a little pricey as well.
Yeah. I was just interested because, I own all the original fucking Punishers, and I'm pretty happy with myself about that. I didn't pay any money for them at all. But, if I was a Nick Cage kind of guy with that kind of money, I mean, he went around buying up all the first Fantastic Fours, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
It's pretty cool.
It'd
be cool if you had, a massive basement and it had on the walls kind of thing or something, you know?
I mean, realistically, I don't know. Again, it's all to do with the coin, Dave, but I'd pick one or two issues that I'd really love and have them slabbed.
Sure.
For you, similar with you with the Punisher collection, I've got, say, the Moon Knight collection. I'm just happy to bag and board them, you know, as long as they're kind of... Yeah. And they're safe as houses, so...
Yeah, they're sitting in my cupboard behind me. I'm happy with it. I didn't have to pay a fortune. I've got them all. They're not going anywhere.
No, exactly.
I'm way too cheap to go and buy all that first appearance stuff. But
me too.
You know, it just feels like it feels like a bit of a waste of money when you can just go and read. This is going to sound terrible, but you can read the issue digitally as well.
Yeah, true. But if it's an issue that, true. If it was Punisher 1 for you, Dave, or Amazing Spider-Man, whatever the first appearance of Punisher.
Amazing Fantasy 23 or whatever it was.
Yeah, that would be pretty special.
It would be to own it, but I imagine for the Amazing Fantasy first appearance of Spider-Man, you'd be paying in the thousands for sure. Surely. I mean, I don't know. That's the thing. I don't know, how much, that would be worth. Would that be worth more? Nick Cage was buying stuff that was worth more than $1 million.
What's more than a million? Really?
Yeah, Nick Cage bought stuff the first appearance of Superman.
Yeah, Action Comics one. That would be, I think that's the most expensive, right?
Spider-Man be? The first appearance of Spider-Man. I'm doing my new thing on the show now where I'm fucking checking stuff out as we're going.
Amazing Fantasy, right?
Yeah, it's Amazing Fantasy. I want to say 23, but I could be wrong. First appearance, Spider-Man value. Let's see what Google tells us.
As you looking that up, Dave, as well, I mean, what you said, I guess it's not about reading the story anymore. It's about owning a piece of history.
How about this? Here's an article from 2011. Spider-Man's first appearance sells for $1.1 million. There you go. In auction. Back in 2011.
Wow.
Beating Detective Comics 27, Batman's first appearance to become the second most expensive comic book ever sold. Superman's first appearance sold. Action Comics 1 remains in first place. A copy sold last year, which was 2010, for $1.5 million.
Wow.
Now, I believe that was the kind of stuff Nick Cage was involved with. Yeah. Nick Cage was heavily... Like, God bless Nick Cage. I love Nick Cage because he got all this money from his movies. He was great in some of the movies. And then he sunk a lot of it into, you know, well, I mean, fucking houses and castles and stuff. But he also bought, like, fucking cool comic books and stuff. I saw that picture of him at Las Vegas Comic Con where he's just, like, fucking... He's like a gigantic whale going through the room, and he's just like buying up, man. You know?
And he's a huge Ghost Rider fan. I mean, that's
I love that
why
about
kind of yeah. So no doubt he's got all of Ghost Rider, which incidentally, Ghost Rider is very hard to find in trade. Dave, I don't know if you've
I do know that. It's annoying.
They sell out. They so I'm lucky to I've nabbed two. The Daniel Way collection is very easy to get.
I just bought on Amazon. I bought the Daniel Way complete collection and the first collection of Jason Aaron. I just bought them the other day.
You got the complete collection of Jason Aaron?
No, I got the complete collection of Daniel Way.
Daniel Way, yeah.
One volume, complete collection, and I got the first volume.
Oh, the first one, yeah.
The first volume, like, of Jason Aaron.
Yeah, with Jason Aaron, I'm hoping they'd collect it into some omnibus or something, because that would be awesome.
Well, they might, but, like, this first collection is big too, though, man. So that's what they're reprinting it as, like, big collections.
Yeah.
Like, I think it's, like, 350 to 400 pages kind of thing.
Wow, okay.
So, you know, I thought, why not? I'll just have them for the shelf, because I love Ghost Rider. One of the biggest things that appeals to me about Ghost Rider is the pure visual aspect. Yeah. I think Jilly, he's one of the best characters out there.
Visually, like, one of the most striking, I'd say. Yeah,
he's awesome. Sometimes I talk to the guys in Inner Demons, and I go, sometimes I feel like I'm Ghost Rider Man just roaming the streets. And they go, Dave, it's a curse. It's a curse. And I'm like, doesn't it feel like a curse, man? Like, it feels like I could just ride.
You feel free.
Yeah, I just feel like I can just ride the highways, man, dispatching the pen and stare, et cetera, you know?
The pen and stare is so cool. Like,
do you remember in Ghost Rider, the sequel, Spirit of Vengeance, when they go, illegal downloaders, and he looks into the camera and his eyes shine out? I was like, I felt like a pang of guilt go down me. The pen and stare go, illegal downloaders. It's so awesome.
It is.
Now, you've got some news here. Marvel's partnered with a radio station. What's going on, Ray?
Yeah, so Marvel partners with, I think it's active now. I think it's more, in the States, Sirius XM Pandora. I think there are, like, playlists, themed on particular Marvel characters or particular runs. I haven't listened to it myself, but I think it's a good thing, actually, marrying a bit of music with comics.
Listen to music when I'm reading my comics.
Yeah, remember in the 90s, Dave, that some of the comics, and I actually sent this into This Week in Marvel asking Ryan Panagas, but remember in the 90s they had listen to this soundtrack while you read this issue? Do you remember that?
Vaguely. Yeah.
And, I never did. I mean, this was before the internet, so if you had the CD, you had it. If you didn't, you couldn't listen to it. But I thought that was such a good idea because, you know, music while reading can really kind of evoke a lot. Anyway, so this radio station, I think it's quite nice, just from being a music lover.
It's a marketing ploy too. It's good. I will say Marvel did a very good job on that podcast with Wolverine, and they did.
Yeah, that's still going. I haven't listened to the second season. Have you listened to it at all?
I listened to a couple of episodes. I thought it was pretty interesting stuff.
Very
I think
cool.
Pushing a few boundaries and very much the old radio plays.
Yes.
A callback to them, and they're very successful. I think it was a very good I'd actually recommend to younger listeners out there, people who are just looking to get into Wolverine, guys like James, Michelle's cousin out there, and Becky. Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe try the radio play kind of thing.
A little shout out there, though, Dave. I haven't got the actual details with me now, but they did announce that I read somewhere they're going to do another radio play, Marvel. It's going to be Cosmic.
Punisher.
No, wow. Cosmic. More Cosmic. Galactus and stuff. So,
who cares?
So, yeah, they're going to try that. So it might be the Silver Surfer. Who knows?
Great. Yeah. I'm not going to pretend like I give a fuck about Marvel Cosmic anymore. I'm so over it. Like, I was thinking just the other day about, like, Marvel Cosmic and just in my mind just how unnecessary it is. It's just not my cup of tea at all. Without Stu here too, with his recommendations, have you noticed there hasn't been any Marvel Cosmic recently, Ray? There's been a lot of Conan.
a lot of
violence.
Yeah.
But, Marvel Cosmic's taken a big backseat.
I don't mind.
It is cool they're doing it, though.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. I don't mind the old cosmic here and there. I mean, I do like...
Oh, I know.
I know you don't like Quasar. I like Quasar.
I don't.
Only because Mark Gruenwald, Dave. I don't know. You read Gruenwald in Captain America and stuff?
I've read a ton of Mark Gruenwald in Captain America. It rocked hard.
He is a bloody awesome... He was a bloody awesome writer. Rest in peace. He is fantastic. Anyway, he just as good in his Quasar run. But anyway...
Oh, that's good. Hmm. Now, the Suicide Squad adds Nathan Fillion in a mystery role.
Mm. He's pretty cool.
A lot of people love him out there.
Yeah, I'm a bit of a fan. I saw on TV, free to air TV, he's in a new TV series. And
The Rookie.
The Rookie, and my partner and I, Eve, we were both looking at it, and I said, hang on, is this a... I think, oh, this is a new series. It looks like he's gone back in age. He looks a lot younger.
He's aged well.
So
he's dropped a bit of weight from when he was in Castle.
Yeah, that was it, because we did see Castle for a bit, and he was starting to kind of look his age, I guess. Mystery role. What? Who do you reckon, Dave? You know DC more than I do.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it would be a very minor role. I think for some reason he doesn't get, like, the mainstream roles. I think it's going to be... Like, he was in Guardians of the Galaxy.
Well, they cut him out, though, right?
He was just voicing some, like, fucking bit of his character. I don't even know who it was.
It was the prisoner that tried to pick a fight with Star-Lord in the prison. Remember that?
Yeah, I remember it, but it was blinking you missed kind of thing.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
And I think it'll be similar in this. Like, because Nathan Fillion, for some reason, just doesn't get... He gets a lot of TV work, and James Gunn's his big buddy. But if he was his big buddy, why doesn't he cast him in, like, a normal main role?
He should.
I think Nathan Fillion is a... Look, in this household, big Castle fan, Michelle. I've watched both Fair Share, and we've watched all The Rookie as well. The Rookie's been going... It's like a second season. I've seen shitloads of The Rookie. It's very, very fucking formulaic and dull.
But that's okay. I mean, but there's a certain level of comfort that goes with that, right?
Oh, Michelle's loving it, yeah. Mm. But I'm just saying, like, critically, yeah, it's like watching grass grow. But, but like, it's okay. Castle was better than The Rookie. The story of The Rookie is basically he was, like, an interior designer or something, and for whatever reason he wanted to be a cop, but he's, like, 40-plus, so it's like... He's like the mature age rookie. It's okay. Like, dude, don't be put down by these comments. Like, it's 6 to 6.5 out of 10. He's good in it. He looks like he's dropped weight and, as you said, a bit of age.
Mm.
I've watched multiple episodes of The Rookie.
Okay.
And can say that it does its job. But, like, he's working hard. He came straight out of Castle into that. So he's earning.
Yeah.
So I wonder how much time he has to film too much. I think this will be another blink and you miss it role in the Suicide Squad.
Okay. Okay. I'm going to throw it out there. Starman. I don't know. He'll be Starman in the Suicide. Is that you?
That's your role.
Is it? Okay.
Starman's a huge role. Okay. Like, I think he'll be one of the characters, like, he might voice, like, King Shark, you know?
Ooh, okay.
Something like that. A character that they can kill off very easily, because the whole point of Suicide Squad is that someone dies.
Oh, okay. You know? How about that floating starfish? Would he be one of them?
Conqueror.
Oh, yeah. No?
Well, Sarah the Conqueror is one of the fucking best villains out there.
Okay.
He's a Justice League villain.
Okay, right.
Sarah the Conqueror. He could voice a character like that for sure. I think more than likely, I'll go on record right now, I think more than likely he'll voice a character.
Okay. Look, just to, you know, make it interesting, I reckon then that he'll get a normal
live
role.
Live action role,
yeah.
Well, let's wait and see. I'm saying you'll voice a character. I'm basing this on nothing. You're saying live action. You're basing it on nothing. Let's see.
The stakes are high.
It's a 50-50, man. It's a coin flip.
That's it.
Yeah. Now, Wyatt Russell, Kurt Russell's son, is playing U.S. agent, Winter Soldier, and Falcon. This has got
his son.
So fucking excited, man. Yeah.
Yeah, apparently he's, we discussed this in our show. He was in Overlord, apparently a movie. It was a zombie movie.
Terrible movie. I watched it. Yeah, basically, U.S. paratroopers land in a German town where they've been experimenting with the zombie virus. I thought it was going to be so good. It's painfully boring.
Is it? How is Wyatt in it? Is Wyatt?
I didn't even know he was. I don't even know who he was. If he was the lead guy, he was fine. Yeah.
Do you reckon Kurt Russell named him after Wyatt Earp? You have to. Yeah.
Yes.
Because he was in Tombstone, right?
Tombstone, and Kurt Russell loves Western. So yeah. High chance. Pretty cool name to have, Wyatt. Wyatt Russell.
What? Okay, I didn't know. Is he so? Sorry, I missed it. Was he good in that? Was he all right?
Yeah, yeah. That was just a terrible script. But like, no, yeah. The lead actor was fine.
I'm excited. Like U.S. agent. That's a cool role.
I love it, dude. That's, like, that's, I love that.
It's kind of like, yeah. Sorry.
The captain storyline in the Captain America comics with the U.S. agent and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Wicked dude.
He's a bit rough as guts, isn't he? He's kind of like, he's very different from Captain America, but I like it. I like him in it. I followed West Coast Avengers for a bit. He was in there.
Yes, because that's where he went. Because what I read, what I read a couple of years ago, and shout out to Geraci, is I read they bring in, for whatever reason, Captain America or stops being Captain America, and they bring in this John Walker, I think his name was.
Yes, John Walker,
They bring him in, and he's just like a real hardliner.
Yeah.
And he's also a little bit nuts.
Yeah.
And then they actually kill him in the comic, but then they rebirth him in West Coast Avengers, yeah?
Yeah. Yeah,
like, it's a fake death. It's not a real death. And
comics, yeah.
He sort of plays the heel against Captain America. He's kind of like a bit of a villain. And I haven't read any of the West Coast Avengers stuff, but I sort of wanted to because I was so hooked into the storyline. How long was he in that, and was he playing, like, because U.S. Agent is just kind of like Captain America, but in black, isn't he?
Oh, no, yeah, but he's not as moral, I guess. He's not as upstanding as Captain America,
Yeah, he's way more violent and
all that kind of stuff. Yeah, and he's a bit of a shit stirrer as well. I remember that from the team. He always saying something to cause a bit of a ruckus.
Right.
But he's, I don't know, in the night, he was there for a fair bit. He was there during even Operation Galactic Storm, from memory.
Yeah.
So that's going into the 90s.
So were you picking these comics up at the time, Ray?
Sorry?
Were you picking these comics up at the time?
I was, yeah. Yeah.
Wow, you were heavily into this kind of stuff at the time.
Yeah.
I was reading my Punisher and Judge Dredd. You were reading some West Coast Avengers.
Oh, I had my finger in a lot of the pies, actually. So I had a lot of street level. Oh. Like, one of the titles I still collect consistently is Daredevil all the way from the beginning. But, you know, Spider-Man, Punisher, Ghost Rider, I had a whole heap. The Avengers, again, all the X-Men.
Allowance right out, man. That allowance must have been real stretched.
Man, it was. I don't know how I did it, to be honest. But
you couldn't do it nowadays with comics costing, like, you know.
And the amount of titles these days as well, there's a lot more. And, even I collected Moon Knight back in the day then as well. So, yeah, I try to collect a lot. Yeah.
That's cool. Like, I'd be interested in that stuff. I'm actually thinking this Winter Soldier and the Falcon show seems pretty interesting to me.
Yeah, I read also just today about it. Apparently the writer has revealed that one of the plots, one of the storylines is the Falcon, I guess, justifying why he's been given the shield or something, and how, because people are angered that he's apparently the Captain America. This is in the TV show. And so a lot of it's him trying to justify him being given the legacy. I think that would be quite interesting.
Well, that's got to be part of it. Like, I mean, you know, who will wear the shield?
Mm.
That was a big part of it when Captain America died in the original comics.
Yeah.
Now, how about this? Marvel Comics alters its origin stories with a new fictional war replacing actual historical conflicts. So Punisher is no longer fighting in Vietnam or even in the Gulf War. To me, this is fucking sickening. That we've now got this stupid, like, Cyan Kong war, some invented war that apparently everyone, like, Iron Man fought in that war and got captured, Punisher fought in that war. It's this mythical war that they've invented, this history of the Marvel Universe, and they've just lumped everyone into it.
Wow. Where was this? Where did you see this?
Oh, my in-depth research on the internet, basically. Yeah,
right.
It just came up on Bleeding Cool or something. Like,
right.
I believe it's in Marvel History of the Universe by Mark Waid, the second issue. I tried to get through the first issue. It's still on my fucking iPad. It was so dull. Did you listen to my review of History of the Marvel Universe 1?
Oh, I did, and I think...
It was so fucking dull, dude.
I'm on the same... I do appreciate the beautiful art by Javier Rodriguez. I can't fault that.
It's great art.
But you're right, though. It is very encyclopedic. It's very heavy with stuff. I still got it on my iPad as well. I think I'm still about 65% through.
Me too.
It's just, I don't know. Look, and it's not because, you know, it's not because we're Philistines by any means, Dave. It's just so much to read, and I can't be bogged down with something that I'm only half interested in.
That's so fucking dull. Yeah. Like it was mind-numbingly dull. Mm. But what do you think about this? Let's break this down.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to be brutally honest. Punisher should be fighting in the NAM. You know what I mean? And then, like, that's where Punisher, like, he appeared in the NAM comics. To me, Vietnam War was where he was born.
Mm.
But now we've got this stupid fictional war. It's not even the Gulf War anymore, which is what they updated it to. And, like, it's just, I hate it. I hate it when they have the countries that are almost the same name as the real country.
Yeah, yeah. It's weird, isn't it? It's a weird thing because, you know, I mean, comic books, the universe is so strange. And, like, people don't age, you know, in it. No. But, you know, they're still beholden to when they first were created to be tied to that. But obviously in the real world, time goes on. The Vietnam War is now a long way in the past.
Sure.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't agree with them coming up with a fictional backstory.
I hate them.
I don't know. Maybe either they just keep it, have him in Nam and just, like, stuff it. You know, Nam was in the 70s, whatever. He's still 40 or 50 now.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I just feel like that making it fictional is what's really annoying me.
Mm.
It's the fictional aspect. Like, they changed it to Afghanistan or Iraq, and I was like, okay, you know, I'll allow it. But now it's this fictional bullshit war, and I'm just, and then Tony Stark's included as well. Everyone's included. Everyone whose basis is in a war, that war is always going to be like 10 years in the past now, and that's where they all came from.
Yeah, it's a bit weird. I mean, look, at the end of the day, it's not going to impact too much on the comics, but... Yeah, I mean, I'd like to just keep on thinking that Punisher is from the NAM, or, you know.
I will. Yeah. I mean, and I watch, have you watched that, the Vietnam War documentary series by Ken Burns?
No, I haven't, no.
10 parts, man. I'm so deep into it, dude. It's so fucking interesting. Mm. It goes from all angles. It goes from the original French angle, the American angle, the Vietnamese angle.
Okay.
You know, like, both sides of the conflict are covered. It's gripping viewing, dude. Nice. I'm like part 6 or 7 into a 10-part series. I'm deep in the jungles, man.
Well, is this a Blu-ray or...?
It's on Netflix now. You can download it. Like, I mean, it's on Netflix now. It's just called The Vietnam War. Ken Burns, he did like, great documentaries on the American Civil War, on baseball, all sorts of things.
On jazz.
Like,
yeah, he did jazz as well.
Yeah. I skipped jazz.
Come on.
I gave jazz the big skip, dude. But no, the Vietnam War thing, and dude, it's made for me because I'm so deep in the jungles, dude. I'm so deep in there, deep in the mud, fighting. You know, just killing, dude.
That's what I get
down to. That's where Frank was born, dude. Frank was born in the hellhole of Vietnam, and then he came back to a nation that didn't even respect the soldiers that fought there.
Frank was born there. Oh, no, oh, you mean, okay, right.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, like, the Punisher was born there.
Yes, yeah,
and,
yeah.
And then he came back, you know, people weren't respecting the veterans. He came back to the, you know, peace demonstrators, like, throwing rocks at them and stuff.
Yeah.
And then his family was killed in Central Park.
Yes.
And he declared his war on crime.
Yep.
I mean, that's where Frank was born, in the
Oh, actually.
Fictional war.
Just as a little aside there, Dave, you've been reading, obviously, Savage Avengers, right?
Yes.
How cool is that little tidbit that Jerry Duggan puts in, adds that little seed into Frank's mind about how he shielded himself behind his wife, you know, made him really feel cut up about that. You remember that?
No, I'm wondering if I've read that issue.
I think it's the second last one, issue 5.
Oh, go back.
So that high priest or whatever, he plays mind games, and you know.
Because Frank didn't do that.
Sorry?
Frank didn't do that.
Well, Frank was questioning himself. Now, there's a bit in it where he gets, the priest goes away, and Frank's still obviously rattled maybe at the fact that that is actually what he did, because the deep-seated concern was that he's a soldier and his reflexes kind of had him kind of ducking for cover for that. And so, you know, whole new level of guilt for Frank Castle there.
I hate it. Frank Castle, like, let's be brutally honest here. Frank Castle didn't hide behind his wife when they were...
Well, not hide, but it's just a reflex, you know. It's something you do as a soldier. But, yeah.
I'm not impressed. No, I'm not impressed at all. This is up there with Batman's dad cheating on Martha.
Oh. Yeah.
Remember when they did a recent thing and they desecrated the Batman Wayne family by making his father like a drug addict and a philanderer on his wife. And I just felt that disrespected the entire legacy of Batman. Stu was laughing at my expense, but I just felt like I was just spitting on the Wayne family name.
Yeah. Just as bad as the
Frank hiding behind his wife is absolute garbage. I'll say it right now. I'll say that's a garbage fire of an issue if that's the case. I didn't even know that existed. I must have missed it when I read it.
Get Jerry Duggan on and we can have some words.
I don't love this storyline beat. I hope it's real. That's not the case.
It was very fleeting. Look, I don't think they'll dwell on it anyway. It was just a little mind game.
I'm going to dwell on it. It's going to keep me up tonight. I'm going to have to go back and read the issue. Is it issue 4? Savage Avengers 4?
I think it's the one with Conan. It's the one with Conan, Punisher, and Venom on the cover. They're on the cover all the time.
I'll check it out, Ray, because you've really rattled me.
Because
Frank's, I understand your point. He's a military guy ducking for cover.
Yeah.
But I've read the original issues, man, and like the flashbacks in War Journal and stuff. Mm. And Frank got hammered in that fight. He was left for dead in that fight.
Yeah, right.
Like, and then he woke up and, like, Maria was dead, Frank Jr. was dead, his daughter was dead.
I mean, it could be something that high priest guy was just doing to play around with Frank. It may not have happened. So, but Frank cried in that issue, Dave. Go read it. He cried in it.
Wow. Okay. I don't remember Frank crying in like the last 40 years of reading him. Like, it takes a lot to bring the man to tears.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Wow. Well, you've got me fired up now. I'm awake. Wow. Now, what about this? A bit of controversial news on the Sydney. Lois Lane likes to report from the trenches. Brian Wood, writer Brian Wood, faces fresh allegations of sexual harassment dating back several years, with the founder of Comics Alliance, Laura Hudson, coming out with the allegations. This follows similar allegations by Tess Fowler several years ago. Basically, that Brian Wood, with his wife potentially pregnant at the time, was like laying the moves heavily on these women at cons and kind of like allegedly was sort of like then withholding work or doing something like that. Like he was being kind of super sleazy.
Yeah.
Now, the interesting part of this story, like, none of this is new news other than this woman came out with the new allegations, which were very similar to the allegations, which he didn't entirely refute at the time, and they sort of cost him jobs. Now, the sticky relationship between icky creative types and good to great art, now, I consider Brian Wood, what I have read of him, like his Northland and various things, fairly good. But, like, I certainly don't condone these kind of actions, like...
Mm.
Brian, what do you think, Ray?
Yeah, this is a tough one, and I don't want to sound hypocritical because there are a lot of people, like, you know, we joke about Peter David, one of my favourites. I do love his work, but, you know, outside of work and as a person, what he's done is questionable. This is obviously...
GoFundMe page to pay the taxes, for example.
Yeah, exactly. And so, Brian, well, this is taking it up to another level.
I'd say this is a lot worse, personally.
It is... For sure, absolutely. The thing is, though, we have read. We did the Massive on your show, which was very good, very well written. Look, I enjoy his stuff on Moon Knight as well. I can't say that I'm a gushing fan of his. No. So for me, his actions tend to outweigh his art in this instance.
Yeah, I agree.
And I think it's appalling what he's done, especially if his wife was pregnant. That's just friggin' not on. Yeah. In any case as well.
He was allegedly hitting up aspiring or just beginning people in the industry, like young women in the industry. a classic power move.
Yep.
And sort of promising work if they slept with him, basically, is the allegation.
No. Well, then that's just not on. Abusing your power is even worse. You know, if it's just cracking onto them, not to say that's acceptable as well, or harassing them, but, you know, to abuse your power, then there's something a lot more sinister to it, isn't there? On many levels.
The whole thing is fairly off, and ironically, this guy has made a bit of a living out of, like, strong female heroes and promoting, I think, women at times to be artists in comic books and stuff. So it feels like there's a certain stench to these allegations, which are making it tough for me, as someone who really did enjoy his Northlanders comic, but it leaves a sour taste in my mouth. Dark Horse have announced today, in the last few hours, that they're taking off the Aliens books, which he's been doing.
Well, I mean, that's as pissed off as some fans may be for not getting Alien books, rightly so. They've got they're a company that want to maintain a particular level of, you know, decency, so they've done the right thing, and he's got to pay for what he's done, so...
It's going to be interesting to see where his career goes from this, because when these allegations broke, he was actually writing X-Men, an all-female team of X-Men.
Oh, really?
And then the allegations broke, and his career did take a hit he didn't get any more Marvel work, and he was doing Dark Horse work. So he's been impacted, and now these allegations have resurfaced, and Dark Horse have removed him. So, it's kind of watch this space with Brian Wood's career, I think. I think, frankly, like... He's paying the consequence for being a bit of a sleaze.
Well, that's it. I mean, that's exactly it. He's paying for it. I mean,
good.
Well, that's it. Good. Yeah, exactly.
Is it punishing bullet to the head material? Probably not. should he face some repercussions for his actions?
Yeah. And a little tidbit there, Dave. How did that all panned out? You know, I only found, it was a few weeks ago. It was about Epstein.
Oh, yeah.
Well,
the bullet to the back of the head, and he hung himself in a jail cell, allegedly hung himself in a jail cell. Well, maybe the conspiracy runs far deeper and wider than that. We don't know.
Could be, but for someone that's done such a heinous crime, I guess, live by the sword, you die by it.
People were saying Crooked Hillary was his last cell visitor. Did you enjoy that, right?
You threw that in.
Crooked Hillary. I amuse myself sometimes, Ray. I really do. He's left this world, and I mean, I would have liked to have seen him serving 20 to 30 years in maximum security, personally. You know what I mean? Really pay for his crimes.
That's right. It's akin to, if he did hang himself, I shouldn't really dwell on this, but, like the active
shooters. I don't mind. I'm happy to.
But, like the active shooters and all that, when they take their own life, there is a level of emptiness to it. Like, they haven't paid for their crimes. They've taken the easy way out. This is what seems to be the case for Epstein.
Oh, yeah. Well, I've got my own theories on it, Ray. I believe there was a conspiracy at the highest levels.
Yeah, right.
we won't spend too much longer, because I can tell Ray's desperate to move the conversation on. I could do another 3 hours on my conspiracy theories about that scenario. It director Andy Muschietti confirms The Flash is his next movie. Now, this Flash movie has had more directors than I've had hot dinners. Like, it's endless, the saga of directors that have come and gone on this movie.
Yeah. I'm still excited by the fact that they're going to do a Flash movie. Is it going to have Ezra Miller as Flash, do you know?
Well, he was attached still. He hasn't formally been moved off the project, but there's quite a lot of speculation they'll recast.
Do you think there's any chance of getting that TV guy?
No. I think there's no chance of that. Grant Gustin?
Yeah, that guy. Yeah, no?
I think he's very good, but no, I don't think that'll happen. But yeah, I do agree, he's quite good. I actually quite like the Flash show. I kept meaning to watch it. More of it. I thought it was quite entertaining.
For sure. And this director, Andy Muschietti.
He's done It 1 and 2, chapters 1 and 2.
It's the apparently the most successful horror film of all time.
Yeah.
Box office wise, so that's pretty good. He knows what he's doing. It's good. I'm excited. I'll go see the Flash film.
Yeah, I'll definitely see it. Like, dude, the Mark Waid Flash run, the Geoff Johns Flash run are fantastic. Yeah. And I'm not the Flash's, like, biggest supporter, but, like, Mark Waid's Flash run is fucking amazing. You know, and Geoff Johns Flash run is very
good. I've been meaning to catch up on them, because I do like Mark Waid.
We need to get you in like a basically like some sort of like a bunker scenario, Ray, where you're shielded from the world, and we just give you the flash run and you just read through it.
You know? Yeah, yeah, I'll be happy to. Be happy, happy to spend my days reading the Flash. Yeah, yeah. I mean, because that's a movie that I will want to see. Look, I've seen Shazam as well. I haven't actually seen Aquaman yet. I actually hired
it. Shazam. Aquaman's better than Shazam.
Is it? Okay. Because I hired it, actually, Dave, and it ran out. It expired because I just wasn't.
Movies from these days?
I've got a box office, a digital Telstra box office thing.
Oh, okay.
And when we got the deal, we got $100 free credit. So,
have you ever heard of downloading?
Sorry?
Have you ever heard of downloading? You just download the movie, man.
Yeah, but, I mean, not when I've got $100 free credit to...
Although, Ray, you used some of that $100 free credit, you didn't get to watch it, man.
I know, because I had a week to watch it, and I just wasn't compelled enough to turn it on.
So, it's quite good. It's quite good.
Okay.
I found it quite enjoyable. Look, it's not going to win any Academy Awards, but it was quite enjoyable.
Okay. I saw the action scene at the end. I thought that looked a bit basic.
CGI heavy.
Yeah, a bit basic. But anyway, I haven't seen the whole film.
Have you seen Venom?
Yeah, I love it.
It's about as good as Venom.
Oh, is it? Okay. Is it as fun as Venom, though?
No. I slightly prefer Venom. But it's not a bad movie in itself, is what I'm trying to say.
Okay.
Anyway, now Watchmen is coming October 20 on HBO. There was a new trailer. I'm still very on the fence about whether this is going to be a good series or not. We know that Damon Lindelof came out and said it's going to be a remix of the fucking Watchmen comic, and I hate that description.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm really on the fence about this. Like, the police are going to be wearing masks.
I don't know. I've never been a huge Watchmen fan. I've got the trade. I've read it. It was good. It's really just not. It doesn't appeal to me as much as you know.
Some other stuff.
Well, yeah. I mean, and I do respect it for how its merits and how good it is. As for the show, look, I'm watching The Boys. I'm loving that.
It's a good show, isn't it, man?
It's a fantastic show. That's got the whole kind of realistic superhero take.
Yeah.
I guess I'll watch The Watchmen, but I'm not, rushing towards it, so.
I'm very ambivalent towards it. I want to try it out. I know Adam the Computer is very excited.
Yeah. I mean, it could be like The Boys, Dave. Like, I was ambivalent, and look, I'm just laughing about it, so.
I barely watched The Boys, and then I started watching, and I was so hooked. You're right. It could be fantastic. Now, the final news item is Moon Knight apparently is coming back in comics in awesome and unexpected ways. Do you have any more? I know you're the Moon Knight guy here. Have you got any more news on like when Moon Knight's going to have a solo title and all that?
It's going to be December, so we're very excited to be able to review the new series whenever. I'm excited to hear about the creators, the writers.
Yeah,
and
the creative team or not?
No, nothing's been revealed. Only that your mate, CB Sobolski, had said that he's going to be coming back in an unexpected way, so we don't know. People are speculating it's off the back of Jason Aaron's Avengers book, because he has mentioned Moon Knight a couple of times in there and Khonshu, so it might be through. There's some mummies and some Egyptian stuff, so it could be through that.
Are you reading the Avengers by Jason Aaron?
I had to drop it. I've dropped a fair few titles because it just got too expensive. So yeah, I have. I've really enjoyed it. But yeah, I've just from about issue 23 or 24 onwards, I've stopped. Right. So
fair enough. But you'll be hopping all over this Moon Knight when it comes out.
Oh yeah, yeah, exactly. And as I was saying, look, there's other things as well, like Contagion, which is a 5-issue event coming in October. That could maybe somehow, because it's got Moon Knight in it, it could somehow inform how he comes back. We don't know, but no information. So.
Okay. I mean, I want you to be doing is you stay on that buzzer for whoever they cast as Marlene. I want that when they cast Marlene, just get on that bat phone to me and go, Dave, we have the casting. I tell you what, I mean, everyone thinks it's just a sexual thing that I have with Marlene. It's not that. I also think she's the world's greatest girlfriend. I think she's one of the best girlfriends in comics.
She is. I mean, she constantly pulls Moon Knight out of the fire. You know, she saves him countless times. So,
everyone thinks it's just because she's a blonde with big boobs. That's part of it. But it's also the fact of what a good character she is and what a good girlfriend she is to Moon Knight.
Yeah, she is. It's funny, though. She's always represented as being in lingerie and in the bedroom, especially 80s, 90s run. So, but you're right. She does. She's a lot more active than you'd think.
Yes, indeed. Now, it's shopping with Dave and Ray.
Me, cha-ching.
Yeah, cha-ching. And don't forget, you can buy all these comics when they come out at King's Comic Books online and obviously in-store as well. Mm-hmm. Now, the first one I had with shopping with Dave and Ray is the Thor Epic Collection, The Black Galaxy. This is introducing Eric Masterson, the 90s-era Thor, and I thought this would be up your alley potentially, Ray.
Oh, absolutely, Dave. This is a great one. I loved it. Again, if I had enough money, I'd get this one. For sure. Thor runs around this time, the 90s, is a lot of fun. He goes into Eric Masterson goes into Thunderstrike as well, a very 90s character.
Sure.
But Thor as well, yeah, is quite cool. And I love the Epic Collections. So.
Yeah, the Epic Collections are good. It's great they're collecting this kind of stuff. The Captain America Epic Collections are fantastic as well.
Very good. The Punisher ones.
Oh, the Punisher ones are fucking must-buys. And Conan Epic Collections, I'm getting all the Conan that's coming out this year.
Yeah.
Right now, Ray, I've got, like, these Epic Collections and stuff have really been rebuilding a lot of my collection. We also got the Fantastic Four Complete Collection, Jonathan Hickman.
Jonathan Hickman, yep. Have you been reading House of X and Powers of X?
I'm one behind on each of them, but, yeah, I have.
Okay. Thoughts?
Positive, but not wildly positive. I'm enjoying it without being totally enamored, you know?
Yeah, I've reread House of X again. Really enjoyed it the second time.
I like the Moria McTaggart issue.
But I reread the first one, and it's really good as well. Like, it's, yeah. Anyway.
Got high expectations for that. Then, Ray, you've got one here?
Yeah, The Girl in the Bay. This is through Dark Horse, but through a line, Berger Books, and this is... Sorry?
Karen Berger's line, the former editor of Vertigo.
Yes, yeah. Okay, right. Didn't realise that. This is written by J.M.D. Mateus, friend of the show. We had him on. This, you know, very interesting book to go check out. It's about
storyline of someone who got killed a long time ago, and it's like
I think it's a bit of a mystery as well. Sounds a little bit, supernatural, so... quite interesting. J.M.D. Mateus, very introspective way of writing. People that read Kraven's Last Hunt would know it. So,
oh, fantastic! On Kraven's Last Hunt, also did some good Captain America. He did a lot of Marvel work. He did a ton of Marvel work and DC work on Justice League.
Yeah, he did Doctor Strange, Defenders, Captain America. He's done a fair bit. An Amazing Spider-Man and Spectacular Spider-Man. So,
how was he on the show? How difficult was he to get? I wouldn't mind getting him.
Not that hard, Dave. He's very active on Twitter. Give him a tweet. And
I've met him on Twitter a couple of times, actually.
Yeah, just get him on Twitter. He'll give you his email and just go from there. And it's pretty good.
Right, no, I actually would like to get him on the show. He's a very interesting guy.
Very cool guy, yeah.
He met John Lennon in the 70s.
Oh, wow. Because he's a muso. He started as a musician.
Yeah.
And then he was a music critic. So, yeah.
Yeah. He basically got to sit in with when John Lennon was recording around Walls and Bridges.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, it's pretty fucking cool, actually. Like purely just as a total fanboy, like he just managed to be in the studio at the time when John Lennon was there.
Wow.
That's awesome. Like John Lennon in the mid-70s, man. You know? Awesome. Whatever gets you through the night, it's all right. It's all right. You got here, X-Men Milestones Inferno. Right? This feels like right up your alley. Inferno comic.
Yeah, it's again, I just love these collections where they, you know, there's big sagas. So, obviously, Extinction Agenda, Mutant Massacre, Inferno, they're all being reprinted again. They've been printed countless times already, but Milestones is coming out. And I think there's one more focused on the Chris Claremont run as well. So, not only just the sagas that he did. Worth checking out for sure.
Oh, definitely. It's a very strong time. They did the X-Men Milestones of Fall of the Mutants recently, I believe. Yes. I've got the big hardcover omnibus of Fall of the Mutants.
Oh, wow. Great.
Yeah, no, It's pretty wicked. And also, I wanted to mention Jim Starlin's Dreadstar comics. I don't know if you've heard of this, Ray. I was just listening to Word Balloon. It's a big series of, like, sort of, like, sci-fi comics he did back in, I think, the 80s, independent stuff. And he's reprinting it all in three big collections. I think I'm going to collect the whole lot. Jim Starlin, we know him from Infinity Gauntlet, from The Cult and Batman and, like, Death in the Family. Very gifted writer, and his most lasting thing, I think, is Thanos, you know?
Yeah. Oh, no, Starlin is a big, big name, even before the movies. So, yeah, it'd be interesting to see his stuff as well.
Oh, yeah, and I've actually checked out some of his Dreadstar stuff, and it's pretty fucking cool. So I'm going to get those hardcovers when they came out. He kickstarted them, okay. But they're going to be available commercially as well. So that's one to keep watching for this space. It's Weekly Comics, Ray.
Woohoo!
And Ray went to town on Weekly Comics. You gave me a I thought I was back in school. I had homework. I was Michelle trying to talk to me. I go, Ray's giving me some homework. I can't talk. I'm still going.
That's it. A bit of a nervous read, huh? Yeah.
And the first one for this week was Marvel 1000. I believe it's 80-pager.
80-pager, yeah. It's a big chunk. And so, yeah. Sorry, Dave.
Well, I was just going to say. So basically, it starts from the timeline. The concept of it is it starts from the timeline of when the first Marvel comic was ever released, all the way through to now, and each year it has a vignette, one-page storyline of the character and then a little factoid about something to do with that character in that year. Mm-hmm. So often their first appearance of the character or their first, you know, wearing the uniform, a different uniform. I gave this 9 out of 10, Ray. I really found it entertaining. It had a kind of deeper storyline behind it, but I just found like the kind of little one-page one-shots of everybody really like quite fascinating to read. I was really drawn into it.
Yeah,
different writer and different artistic team on each page, basically.
Yeah, it was very good. It was very engaging. The art, the writing was very good. It's only a small thing. You say, each page is done by a different writer. Al Ewing actually had a big chunk of a lot of those pages. Yeah, but he. But there is a thread throughout all of this as well, Dave, the Black Mask, which starts at the very beginning and we see it at the very last page. And it's we find out that it's actually a part of Eternity, the cosmic entity, and whoever wears it is the equal to whoever they're opposing. So you see it all throughout the ages with the Black Knight, at the very beginning with the three, what are they, three scientists?
The three X's. The Enclave.
I found it, yeah, it was really, I really enjoyed and appreciated the historical aspect as well, how you get that little tidbit and you can go, oh, this was, you know, the first appearance of, or this is where Doctor Strange kind of fits into the Marvel universe. This is where Captain Marvel is. And actually, Captain Marvel surprised me how early she was. I didn't realise she was that early.
Captain Marvel's been around since about 1980, I believe.
Earlier. It was pre. Yeah. So She-Hulk was around 1980 onwards. And then loving the period where, you know, where you jumped into comics. So once they got into, you know, the 90s and then through 2000s, yeah, it was a lot of a fun read. I gave it a 7.5. Look, I've been trying to be very, you know, sparse with my marking, Dave. I think I took a leaf out of you, so I'm surprised that you gave it a 9. I really
enjoyed it, man. I kind of sucked into it, dude. Like, I agree. I mean, look, like all these little sort of like anthologies, they have the limitations. But I just dug the sheer variety and I did find the storyline, the overarching storyline, not that fascinating.
True. I can't really find much to fault it with, actually. 7.5 for me is a good mark, so that's why I gave it, but it's not. Maybe it should be a bit higher, but I'll stick with 7.5.
That's fine. Yeah, and I get 9 because I really like the artistic variations and just the sheer amount of. I felt like you were finally getting a lot of comic book.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, I felt like it was a good use of 80 pages kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I think that one page vignette style really added to it. I've got a question to ask you. You know, a couple of them were all pros. Did you read them? Because I didn't.
I did actually. One of the maybe slight disappointments I found was the Miles Morales one, which was basically a page. That was, yeah, I found that a little bit of a nothing story. It's just about him trying to get into his house. He locked himself out. It really didn't give me much. But
that was
on the
weak source. That was very weak source.
Very weak. But on the other one, Dave, I definitely compel you to read it. It's the one on Dark Raven. It's a black and white page about this vigilante. Very interesting. It's actually got me very interested in Dark Raven. It's basically, I'm assuming he's kind of like the Question in DC.
But he looks like him. He looked like him.
Yeah, but he gets given the gift of immortality through one of the villains that he fights.
Oh, no, I did read that one, and he misses her, basically.
Yeah, that's a really cool one. I really love that. So.
Yeah, and look, it all set up, as these things always do, it set up a new character at the end with the wearing the mask.
Yeah, it looks pretty cool. What was it called, a Mask Raider or something?
You know, in my Des Moines books, Des Moines, she puts on this shifting mask, it's like a skull face.
Mm-hmm.
So in my book, she puts on the mask as a skull face, and the skull, like, gets all disfigured and stuff.
Oh.
She puts it on when she's, like, really in the killing mood.
Yep. All right. Like, does it give her any extra?
Slightly, yeah. Slightly enhances her combat abilities. Okay. She's got this amulet that's got like a locket of her hair from a pain goddess. Mm-hmm. When she clutches the amulet, she can heal herself, but it causes her immense pain to do so.
Oh, okay.
So nice. Yeah, when she's really killing, going to almost like a berserker rage, she puts on the skull mask as well.
Ah.
So yeah. So just to let everyone know, Des Moines came up with that idea first, and there are three books out there if you want to explore them, and Des Moines Soulfighter is the latest one, so you should go and check it out, kids. All on Amazon, Kindle or paperback. Now, then we had Batman and Superman 1. Mm-hmm. Look, I mean, I thought this was a very good issue, maybe one of my favourite DC issues in a while. I'm critical of the overuse of the Batman Who Laughs overall, mm-hmm. but this was a good setup to what feels like a good story. I really like the Billy Batson reveal at the end of the comic. I gave it 8 out of 10.
Yeah, I'm with you. Look, not much of a DC reader, but I was very impressed with how solid this issue was. I love the Billy Batson reveal at the end as well. That was just really cool. More so because I really enjoyed the movie, and I've read some Superman Shazam stuff through the Superman podcast, so it was good to see him. Yeah, this Batman Who Laughs, I think it's a... For me, I think it's a pretty silly concept, visually he looks scary, and I think the villain serves the purpose for this story quite well, and it is quite terrifying as well, and this whole idea of him trying to spread this Who Laughs, you know, what is it, it's a drug or something that turns him?
It's a toxin, so a basically toxin, yeah. What happened was basically Batman was fighting Joker, and actually went over the line and killed him. And as he killed him, the Joker toxin infected Batman and turned him into the Batman Who Laughs. So it's kind of like Batman at his ultimate level did actually kill Joker. And he's still the Batman, but he's totally infected with this Joker toxin. And he's just going completely off the deep end.
Yeah, it's a bit, you know, thing. But I like saying Batman and Superman together. That was really good. Very solid. 7.5 again for me.
Did you ever read the original Superman Batman run with Jeff Loeb and Ed McGuinness back in like the early 2000s?
We did one for the show. It was a
Public Enemy.
Oh, I can't remember what it was. I don't think it was Jeff Loeb. No, but we did. Okay. Yeah.
Well, because I read that. I actually collected that run back in the day. But I really dug this issue. What did you give it? 7.5?
7.5. The art was fantastic. I love David Marquez's art. And it was really solid bit of writing. It was, you didn't like fly through it. There was a lot to read, and there was a lot to digest. It was really good. Yeah.
It's my favourite kind of style of DC stuff, actually. And then we had Justice League 30.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't enjoy the art in this, and I'm a bit iffy overall on this whole Doom Year of the Villain event, but I did love seeing the JSA back at the end of the comic. But overall, I really didn't dig the artwork in general on this comic, and I do find this Year of the Villain thing as being just strung out once again by DC.
Yeah, how much did I gave it a 7.5. I mean, again, I was quite surprised. Like, again, not reading much DC stuff outside of Superman. I thought this was okay. And I was kind of engaged in the whole story as well. I'm not entirely sure what is going on because I'm just kind of lumped into it. But I like Lex Luthor looking pretty evil.
The Apex Predator.
Yeah, yeah. And it's obviously setting up that the heroes are trying to throw everything they can, but that's probably not going to be good enough. It's a lot better than we reviewed. What was the other one that we did? Deceased. I didn't really like that at all. And this one,
I prefer Deceased.
Oh, did you? Okay. Well, probably because you know, like you've read all the issues and stuff. But this one, I thought this was a solid enough issue. Yeah, I didn't mind the art as well.
I didn't hate it. I mean, that's why I gave it 6.5. Like, mm-hmm. I just feel like the DC house style, I don't like the way that art's looking to mm-hmm. me. It looks too computer-generated and just doesn't look filled out enough to me. I don't feel like I'm getting enough definition off the page.
Okay.
It's a common complaint that I have with Marvel Comics as well. I feel like their art lacks a lot of warmth.
Oh, absolutely. The She-Hulk annual, we can get to that soon, but that typifies for me a lack of warmth in art. Wasn't the biggest fan of that one.
This is, I hate to sound like an old man shouting at clouds, but 70s, 80s artwork was a lot better than the artwork we're getting today in comics.
Well, I mean, like, if you look at top tier like artists now, they're really good as well. But yeah, you're right. 70s, 80s. I love the 80s, early 80s stuff.
Really nice.
Yeah.
Did you see the recently? I don't know if I sent you on Facebook. It was a picture of Punisher by Klaus Janson, and it just had a picture with a smoking gun of Punisher, and it just said, "If you're guilty, you're dead." it was some house art. It was so good. Klaus Janson on art, and the very beginning of the Mike Baron run, it was about as good as it gets. Nice. I used to walk around at school saying, "If society won't punish the guilty, he will," because that was what other house had. But if you're guilty, you're dead. And just Frank staring at you with a gun.
Yeah, he's a scary figure, Frank. The old Punisher.
I always found it very comforting.
As long as you do right.
I always do right, you know. Now, the Fantastic Four for Yancey Street, issue one.
Mm-hmm.
This reminded me of, I really do like the Thing a lot. If I'd gone up in the 70s, I would have been a huge Thing fan. I'm sure they can do them well in movies. I thought this was a really heartwarming issue. And it's not going to win any awards or anything. Like, I gave it 7 out of 10, but I responded to this one emotionally. I just thought, what a good Thing issue, is basically what I thought.
Very, very, like a heartwarming kind of tale, good-natured. And that's what you want from The Thing, a story centered around The Thing. I gave it a 6.5. You know, I'm trying to be really a little bit harsher on my markings. Sure. 6.5. I love the Greg Smallwood, one of my favorite artists. He opens it up. I found though the jump in art style is distracting. So you jump from Greg Smallwood to Mark Bagley to I think Pepe Larraz is in some one of them, but I found it distracting and it didn't really serve any purpose that they were jumping. It just randomly turned the page and you're different art. So I felt the story was disjointed with that. But having said that, it's a very wholesome tale. I love the ending with Dr. Doom.
I love that.
He just wanted to, you know, throw a pie in Ben's face, and that was it. You know, nothing more. And
the old lady was a Doombot, wasn't she?
Yeah, she was a she had the her iris was a camera. Really cool. It was good. It's just that the beats weren't happening for me in this issue.
Sure. Yeah. This is one for the Thing completists out there. I think. I'm sure, God bless them, there are some people out there who really worship the Fantastic Four and kind of collect all the issues of The Thing. I think you've got to pick this one up if that's you. Then we had She-Hulk Annual 1. I'm giving it 4.5 out of 10. I found the dialogue horrendous with awful puns. And the basic story did not need to be told over so many pages. This felt stretched out and thin. And actually, I found it very hard to understand what was even going on.
Yeah.
Like, this was not a good comic.
It wasn't, actually. I had high hopes for this one because I have read Dan Slott's She-Hulk. I really enjoyed that, and I've heard good things about the Charles Soule run.
Excellent run.
Yeah, and John Byrne. I read a few back in the day with John Byrne's She-Hulk.
I think of John Byrne, or at least a collection of John Byrne comics that I've started reading, actually, of She-Hulk. It's quite good.
Yeah, it is. So this annual coming out, I gave it a 5.5 out of 10. I think the idea, whoever wrote it, had this thought it would be a really cool idea of body swapping, but it just got too convoluted. I wasn't a fan of the art as well. We were just talking earlier on. It lacked any warmth. It was very flat. The backgrounds were just like colors. Yeah. There was no definition or depth in it. It looked like a ring-in, like a real quick job.
Yeah.
And again, disappointing because it had Bullseye in it. And Bullseye isn't even portrayed properly as well. So,
it's terrible. Yeah. I thought this is one of the poorer issues that I've read in a while. I gave it 4.5 out of 10. What did you give it, Ray?
Yeah, 5.5. Yeah. 5.5. So, I mean, I'm working off your system, Dave, about 5 being passable. So this is, you know, just passable. I gave it a pass because the writer went for something different, you know, but execution failed.
I also think that its storytelling wasn't very clear over what was actually happening. But it also was then also stretched out too long.
Yeah.
Like it didn't need to be, it was 30 plus pages and it didn't need to be 30 plus pages.
It wasn't
enough story.
No.
But that's what you're going to get on some of these annuals. Then we had Amazing Spider-Man 28. I mean, I'm giving this 5 out of 10. I found this completely unmemorable, confusing, because I'm coming in at the end of a thing. Yeah. I really didn't enjoy this comic. And everyone tells me how good Nick Spencer's Spider-Man is. This was not a great issue.
Yeah, look, I gave it a 6.5 out of 10. Unfortunately, because I put this in here, Dave, because I wanted you to get into and see how cool the Nick Spencer run is. Unfortunately, cool. Yeah, this is the end of an arc, and it really won't make much sense unless you... And even then, I found closing out the arc, it wasn't that fun. There was no big bang at the end to close this out. It was a little disappointing for me as well. And I think the fact also Ryan Ottley was absent from art took this down a peg, you know, even more. So it's 6.5, yeah. But generally, it's good, Dave. Seriously, Amazing Spider-Man is really good, so...
Okay, maybe I just came out of the wrong
issue. Yeah, I think that was the wrong issue, really.
I, in general, like Nick Spencer. His comics in general. I've actually read quite a lot of Nick Spencer. I've read a lot of his Morning Glories in, you know, Image work.
Oh, okay, is that good? I wanted to read that.
I really, really dug it, actually, to be honest. And I've read quite a lot of Nick Spencer and quite liked a lot of it, so I'm not going to judge him too harshly when I'm coming in at issue 28 at the end of an arc, you know? I know Adam the Computer loves it. Then we had Dr. Mirage.
Yes.
Issue 1, Valiant Comics.
Yeah.
No, Ray, I must admit, in all my comic reading this week, I accidentally didn't read this comic. My apologies for that, because I genuinely, I've been in Adelaide for the last day or so, and I just forgot to grab this one. Can you give me a picture of what it is, because I will go and check it out.
Okay, and look, you know, just to, as a, you know, set it out, Dr. Mirage... there was a series before. She's a paranormal investigator. She can, for want of a better term, she can see dead people. And she's accompanied by her dead husband, Huen, who, along with her, have some magical abilities, mystical abilities.
Right.
So they can cast spells and stuff. But anyway, and that's basically it. And she goes, you know, meets people who have... It deals a lot with death. The theme is death and how people cope with death. And so she comes across people who engage her to, you know, find out either a mysterious death or how to cope with someone that they can't let go. So anyway, so this is a new series off the bat, awesome artwork, and it starts with what's happened is that Dr. Mirage, she's actually lost contact with her husband, Huen, and so she actually feels truly alone now because she was his companion even in the afterlife. She meets up with a young girl, a 16-year-old girl comes to her door, says that I'm in touch with Huen. I can see him and do stuff. And she gives Dr. Mirage details that she actually has spoken to Huen. So this actually gets her intrigued. Then there's a huge reveal in this first issue that she tells Dr. Mirage, I can actually see Huen. We're actually dead and we're actually in hell. That was a massive reveal, and it ends on kind of that. Don't know where it's going to go, but very exciting.
So this was issue one of a new series from Valiant Comics out now, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. So just started, and the writer, I don't have the name of her with me, but yeah, she was very intrigued with the character because it dealt with death. And
that's
so,
a very, very, very cool pitch, what you just pitched.
Mm.
Like, yeah. I will definitely check this out, and I'll give my thoughts on it next episode. I actually mistakenly didn't include it in my comics or on my iPad. Then we had Superman 14.
Yep.
I gave this 6 out of 10. I love the introduction of Legion of Superheroes. I was bored to absolute tears by the opening and barely understood battle scenes. we'll be covering Legion on the show. I did love when they introduced the Legion and the fact that they want Superboy, because obviously Superboy was the original in the original Legion of Superheroes, just the younger version of Superman. He time traveled to the future, the 30th century. But in this one, Superboy is Superman's son, Jonathan, and he's going to join the Legion. What did you think of this issue of Superman?
Yeah, I gave it a 7. I thought it was a fairly decent above average issue. I enjoyed the art. Ivan Reyes is always very solid on the artwork. I love my big cosmic-y battles as well. As much as a street level fan I am, I do love, you know, huge battles out there. Sure. So it was good to see, what's his name? Rogel Czar. I can't remember his name.
I don't know his name either.
Yeah, the big villain who destroyed Krypton. I love seeing him fight Jonathan, Superman, Supergirl, and is it Crypto, the dog?
Yes, Wonder Dog.
So that's good. The only downside, it's with these time travel things, it's just, I know it works with time travel, but it's just so convenient how the Legion just pop up just at that moment to pick up Jonathan.
Well, it's because a pivotal point in history has been reached, formation of the United Planets, which... Yep. Is what's existing in the Legion's time period. I mean, they've got to introduce them somehow.
I know. But it just, just bam, there they are, and towards the end. I wasn't too fussed with them taking John. Sure. Actually, I picked that as well. I mean, it wouldn't be Superman. But no, I enjoyed it. 7 out of 10. Very, very good. So,
and what did I give it? I gave it 6.5 because I was very bored by the opening. But overall, though, I am looking forward to the Legion. I've read a bit of Legion. I know you haven't done a ton of DC reading in your time, but I know that you've kind of increased with Superman stuff. I was talking to Connor.
Yeah.
Have you read any Legion of Superheroes at all at any point?
No.
It's tough. Then it's real tough.
I don't know who they are. Yeah.
Yeah, well, fair enough, man, fair enough. Will you be at all interested in checking them out when they're being rebooted by Bendis?
No.
That's fine. But you're on the signal ray. You be honest, man. Yeah.
I mean, no, I haven't really given it any thought to my DC targets now, apart from Superman, are the Spectre and Swamp Thing. I think they're cool. So,
I also want to mention, I did mean to mention it before, because of the 80th anniversary, Marvel are running 50% sales on Comixology at the moment.
Yeah, I saw that today. Is that on everything?
I believe so. Oh, that's cool. There might be some restrictions on super, super recent stuff, but generally you can punch in the Marvel, whatever it is, 80 code and you get 50% off. So there's some really good deals to be had there.
Awesome.
Now, we're coming to Trade of the Week. This is your trade, Ray. Bloodshot, Setting the World on Fire, Volume 1, was the first 6 issues.
Yeah.
Would you like to give readers the pitch of this? Because I want to say this, I really dug this comic, to be honest. Very much so.
Okay, so this was kind of one of the titles that was a Valiant reboot. So Valiant came back with a vengeance in 2012. They released some titles. Bloodshot, one of the flagship characters. So it's very much kind of like an origin story. So anyway, it's basically Bloodshot realizing that he is being played by this company called Rising Spirit, that he's basically what he thought was real is all been fabricated. They plant whatever's convenient or suitable for his mission. They plant in memories. So if he has a wife and 2 kids here, or, you know, he's called Ray Garrison over there, he's got these identities. Anyway, realizes that it's not him, so he finds out, you know, who the hell am I, and he wants to take down Rising Spirit, run by Simon Orrick, who was the project director, and helped by, I think it's Kuruditch, one of the scientists who have gone rogue. In the midst of that as well, David, which may have been confusing for you, in another storyline there was this big grey ooze, that rising spirit, made of nanites, that kind of engulfed and killed the town. And so Pulse, which was a young girl, she came in to try and stop it. Bloodshot, just quickly, he's basically your amped up Wolverine and or Punisher. He's got nanites, microscopic computers in his blood that can heal him, that can also speak to computers. He can actually change his physical appearance. He's very powerful in that sense. He loves his guns. Basically this was him trying to take down Rising Spirit in those six issues.
Something I noticed early on was, like, what a good introduction comic this was. Like, you didn't... I know it had other nods to the Valiant universe.
Yep.
But they were very slight, and you could come in as a new reader, like I did, and really enjoy this character. I noticed some heavy similarities to Wolverine Weapon X.
Yes.
In a good way, though. Like, it was a really clean comic book. Good art, good storytelling, a real anti-hero of a character. But I loved the concept that he had all these fake memories and his handlers were just feeding and manipulating him.
Yeah. And it's ultra-violent as well. Like, he doesn't shirk away. He's kind of like Wolverine in that he knows he's got a healing factor, so he doesn't pretend to hide or try to defend himself. One of my favourite bits, Dave, is he goes up against these cybernetic, you know, ruffians.
Yeah.
And one of them breaks his arm. And they think they have him pinned, but then he uses his broken arm with a bone as a club, and he swings it and he spikes the guy with his bone.
It's crazy, crazy. Like, the damage levels that this guy can take are immense.
It is crazy amount. So full credit to we've got to take the artist here, Manuel Garcia and Arturo Lozzi. The fantastic artistic team, and written by Dwayne. Oh, geez. Sveir Sinisky.
Oh, yeah. He's a very good writer. He did some really good Punisher as well, this particular writer. Very sadly, he had a daughter that just recently passed away, I believe.
I know.
It's quite a sad story, but he's a very gifted writer. He's a novelist as well.
Right.
He did some Punisher over the years that I've really enjoyed. Basically, he's one of those guys, like, what I've read of him, I've always really enjoyed.
Yeah, no, he's, well, it's funny that you mentioned he's a Punisher writer, because this seems to be right up his alley. He knows the jargon for military operations and stuff like that. It goes into other stuff as well. It goes into Rising Spirit. It goes into the Harbingers a bit later on, Dave. So the children that you see later on, they're all psyots, and psyots are mutants, for want of a better word, in this universe. There's not really much to tell. There's just a lot of action.
How much would you say with Valiant that you have to be reading all the comics to get the story? Can you read, like, just Bloodshot and follow along, or is it really like you need to be reading other comics to understand the universe?
No, I think you can definitely just read the titles that you want. Of course, if you read all of them, you'll get a beautiful tapestry of the universe, because everything is so well connected, but by no means do you need to read one to know the other. You might get a name thrown here and there, like Toyo Harada, which is more of a Harbinger person, but it doesn't affect your enjoyment of the title.
Okay, well, that's good to know. I found this was something I recommended. I recommended this to James, actually. And I was saying to him, mate, this is the kind of book I recommend to new readers, because you don't need to have read, because people are always like, oh, but I don't know where to start with Deadpool, or I don't know where to start with Punisher, or start with Captain America. And, you know, it can be challenging. Whereas this, I'm like, just jump in and read this Bloodshot. And honestly, it's very enclosed. You get a good entertaining story, good artwork, good action-packed storyline in the best kind of old-fashioned way, but done with kind of like a modern technique. I really found it very engaging. Like, I finished the six and I was still raring to go for more. Like had I exhausted myself, I was like hungry for more. And I've got about the first 20 issues, I think.
That's awesome. You'll love it. Bloodshot has consistently been good. Only just recently, in my opinion, the latest run, Rising Spirit, has been a full-on flop.
Right.
But there's a new one coming out by Tim Seeley and Brett Booth, is it? Brett Booth.
Okay.
And that's coming out soon, I think on October or something. That looks pretty good. Hopefully it will be more of the old school stuff like this. But, yeah, it's been pretty much those 20 issues that you've got, Dave, are very consistent.
What did you think of the Jeff Lemire Bloodshot that came out more recently?
Yeah, that's really good as well. It's not as graphic, say, as, you know, these first six issues from Dwayne.
Yeah.
But very well, very, very good, very well done. It's not your melancholy Jeff Lemire stories of Royal City, you know, that we've discussed before. Because he can tend to write those sorts of stories, Essex County, Underwater Welder. But no, it's very much Bloodshot and very well done.
Well, that's good because I find I have no interest in those kind of melancholy, overly, stories like that. But, like, if he's writing a good Bloodshot, it shows me he's got versatility as a
Yeah, it's very good. Yeah, it is very good. Highly recommend it. Bloodshot Salvation. Reborn. No, Salvation. I can't remember.
Okay. Definitely I would say to readers, like, Bloodshot is something to try out. We will continue doing some more on The Signal. I'll do another volume of it before too long because I'm very fascinated. I'm also going to do, on The Signal, I've got my next Valiant comic, I want to do Ninjak. All right.
Oh, just also, sorry, incidentally, Dave, as well, next year, 2020, we are getting a Bloodshot movie. So this will be good prep work. Vin Diesel.
This is what Vin Diesel, is attached to,
So Vin Diesel will be Bloodshot. I think it's in finishing production now. It might be in post-production. It's coming out next year. It's not that long to go. So it'll be a good time, listeners, to get acquainted with Bloodshot. So
that's exciting, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm very, really very excited. Yeah, I'm just hoping they do it okay, you know. It all comes down to the script, doesn't it? I mean, we know Vin Diesel can carry a movie. It's just whether or not the writing's good.
Well, yeah, he can be terrible in his movies at times too, you know.
Yeah.
He's okay. I quite like Vin Diesel personally, but, you know, he certainly had his fair share of flops.
Oh, yeah, true. I just like to remember him in Pitch Black and Riddick.
Very good. Very good.
Very good, yeah. The second one, not so much.
No. But, like, I get your point. Did you like Chronicles of Riddick?
The second one, right?
Was that the second one? Yeah.
I found it a little confusing. I think David Tui, who was the director and writer, I think he tried to just lump everything. It was a big brain dump. He wanted to put his whole sci-fi world in one movie. It was a bit too much. Even, what's her name? Dame Judi Dench, she was in it.
Yes.
And she said as well in an interview, I had no idea what I was saying. Half the lines, she couldn't understand.
It was a very confusing film. I watched it and I was like, what did I just watch?
Yeah, it was very confusing. The first and the third one, Riddick. I don't know if you watch Riddick.
No, I haven't seen it.
It's good. It's back to old school. It's back to your old. Really cool.
Yeah, it's back. Yeah, I think I might have actually seen at least part of it. It's kind of much more of a leaner storyline.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah, like the original Pitch Black was as well.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, Ray, I'm giving Bloodshot, I'd give it an 8.5.
Excellent.
I found it was a very enjoyable and I think a really good advertisement for Valiant Comics.
Mm.
I want to say, like, the character himself, I was sucked in at first by the fact that it seemed like he had all these memories and he was doing it for his wife and his kids and all that, but then all that was false. And he was just this kind of government operative with really no will of his own, wasn't he?
Yeah, so you're back to square one. He doesn't even know who he is. And there's that thing in the trade. It's really good as well. He goes to his wife and son, and we find out that the wife is actually an old high school friend of the scientist, and the scientist had actually Kulderich. He actually implanted all just past experiences he had. So yeah. This wife had grown up, her son had grown up, had no idea who this Bloodshot was.
Yeah, she had no. She was not part of the manipulation in any way.
No.
Like, knowingly.
It was like a high school sweetheart that he just used. So
interesting, I thought.
Yeah, and really quite deflating for Bloodshot. You know, it's kind of that thing of finding out that, oh, she does exist, but it's proof that the memories I had were totally not mine.
Like if I walked home and I just found out Michelle was not real at all, it was all just a construct.
Yeah.
It was all just a hologram.
Your world would just be gone, so.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, and then you start from zero then, you know, and like what do you trust and what don't you trust? They had the one thing I didn't think was particularly good was the fact they've got like the kid talking to him.
Oh, they're the nanites, yeah. And that's right, and they explain it. He goes, why are you coming as a kid, not as a woman? He goes, you've got enough women in your life.
You respond well to children
and women, so they had a construct. And actually, that turns out later on, Dave, I don't know whether you like it or not, but there's a character called Blood Squirt, and he's pretty much like what you see. He's like a miniature Scotty Young version of Bloodshot. Yeah, and he talks to Bloodshot.
That's kind of funny.
Yeah.
That's kind of entertaining. No, look, definitely, I really found it a very enjoyable read. So, I mean, because you gave it how much, Ray?
Yeah, I gave 8.5 as well. So that's a nice, easy 8.5 average for us.
Yeah, for Stu, who likes to record these things.
Is Stu really recording everything down, as in?
Supposedly.
It's like statistics.
I take no interest in it whatsoever at all. I take zero interest in it. And I think he's badly mangled the scoring systems. When he gave Judge Dredd 3 out of 10, it's that much. I really did have the shits that much.
Yeah.
That was so badly reviewed.
Yeah.
Now, I want to move on, Ray. Ideas for upcoming weeks. Tell me what you think. But next week we're going to do Moon Knight, the whole Charlie Houston run.
You had me at hello there, Dave.
Yeah. I'm going to do shortly after that, because I did a poll on the page. Did people want me to do Moon Knight Houston run or Walking Dead Volume 2? And it was a landslide victory to Moon Knight, actually.
Ooh, cool.
It was a landslide.
Yeah, I voted, so yeah.
95% Moon Knight. So no problems, I'll do it.
Wow.
I'm also doing more Walking Dead. I've got all those hardcovers coming my way, so that's going to be interesting.
That's really good, yeah.
Our friends at Inner Demons, shout out to the Collective, are recommending to me some Ghost Rider. I still feel there's a bit of Judge Dredd that we can do as well. You know,
there's always feels some dread, like, eh?
There's just some dread there that coming out. Now, Ray, while we were talking, I was looking on Comixology, and I saw that they've got the epic collection of the West Coast Avengers. They've got one epic collection out already, and they've got another one coming out shortly. So have you got the epic collection of the one that's out?
I've got the first one. Yeah, How the West Was Won. I think
is it good?
I haven't read it yet. It's the very first. It goes all the way back to early West Coast. So I haven't read this stuff. This is like early 80s stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So looking forward to that. The one that's coming out will be the one that has Moon Knight in it.
He's on the cover.
He's on the cover, yeah. So that's quite a memorable arc as well. It's when they go back to ancient Egypt.
Cool.
But the first one, I'll let you know, Dave. I'll start reading it. I'm still rereading X Factor just because I love reading X Factor. So
yeah.
So yeah.
Well, I'm thinking I might grab the digital copy of How the West Was Won because the 50% off. It's only $10.
Yeah. Go for it. Yeah,
pretty good deal.
But I mean, are all the epic collections? They'd all be 50%, wouldn't they? That'd be
And there's plenty of stuff if you look on Comixology that it's already reduced, and you can get another 50% off that.
Jeez, Louise.
There's some stuff there. I think I will definitely grab this epic collection. I'll probably grab a couple of Captain America ones as well.
Great.
You know, just to make it fucking real. Now, I do want to say we're members of the Collective. You can find plenty of other shows like We Are Venomaniacs, I Am Your Target Demographic, Inner Demons, Into the Night, Last Sons of Krypton.
Mm-hmm.
Big shows, big personalities, you know, lots of power, lots of firepower. It's not just the Signal. The Signal blazes from the swamp, we've got plenty of support backing us up. Don't you agree, Ray?
Look, we're all helping each other. We're all sharing love. It's great. So if you like any of your shows, like the Signal of Doom, these other shows, we're all very like-minded. Give us all a listen. Have a look. Check them out. There's something for everyone. It's good. It's a good time to be alive, Dave.
It is a great time to be alive, Ray. Well, thank you very much for coming on the show.
No worries.
We'll catch you next time, because I think we can tap... tap you in, you know, as needed at this point in time, because you are the roving mercenary of the podcast world.
I am a bit of a nomad, a bit of a journeyman. But no,
no man, no country. You're loyal only to the dream.
That's it. I don't know where you come up with it, but I love it. No, happy to always be on the Signal, Dave. It's always fun to chat with you.
Good.
We've got a lot of stuff always to cover. It's good.
Excellent, Ray. Well, thank you.
Used to worry for each other. No one's bothered like before. We sleep with each other's friends. Sneak around, fall apart, and come back for more. We sit around drinking tables, stabilized and keeping score. But my mind is somewhere out the door. Oh, we have grown. Maybe I'm overstayed a while in my time in exile. And oh, time has flown. Clubs, the songs are old, the evening's blown. Go our ways and take taxis home, and talk of Sunday outings and medicate to fight the doubting. But we know we'll always be alone when we have grown. I've overstayed a while. My birth feet didn't take this path, and I'm still looking for a life that matters more than chit chat. We listen to the streets, we're all dead beats, and these old habits are starting to show through. Sorry I didn't get to know you. Oh,